What was the thing that Jake says that's so fucking good?
Good God.
That I quoted to you?
Good grief.
And I am earlier. I was like, when Jake says, oh God.
Video games? Video
classic.
Games.
Oh,
games.
Oh my God, he did a special move.
Why would I say games?
It's July's 2010, and this is the Idle Thumbs Podcast, Episode 9.
And I'm Chris Remo.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
And we're joined today by Sean Famous Vanneman, who's sitting in for Steve Hot Scoop Scanner.
Hey, guys.
Hello,
hey,
Sean Famous Vanneman.
How's it going?
It's good.
Going pretty well.
We're going to start by talking about a panel that we're doing.
That's true.
Really?
Yeah.
Go on.
We're going to talk about video games on a panel at the Penn Arcade Expo in Seattle this September. Our panel is on the third day of the expo, which goes from September 3rd to 5th, I believe, and it will be at 2 p.m. in the Wolfman Theater. So,
Home of
the Wolfman. I think as of now, they think they only have a few days left before they sell out of three-day passes to PAX. So if you want to come see us talk about video games and see me perform a song, probably Space Asshole, and see Nick Brecken on Idle Thumbs for the first time
in the audience, Nick will watch and Chris and I will just sort of hang out.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the fourth row. Good.
Yeah.
He'll shed a few tears.
No, Nick will actually be on the panel. So yeah,
it'll be good. So you should come watch us do that. Hopefully actually people show up. That would be cool.
Yeah.
Oh, so much funnier though. If it is just you guys
if
in a room.
If it's just us. Then it would just be like recording a pod. It would just be what we always do.
Right.
But the whole presentation aspect of it.
Well, we just wouldn't mention that it was the live episode. Yeah. We're just like, oh, hey, what's up? It's Idle Thumbs episode 13, and Nick's here as a guest.
It'd be great if there are two people, though. So in the back, of it, you just had to deal with the guys. Like,
yeah! Boo! Say Puffins.
Say the wizard!
Yeah.
I thought this was the Will Wheaton keynote.
I like that they're slowly turning into Venture Brothers henchmen. Okay. Shut up. Fuck off.
So anyway, so do that. Idlethumbs.net has the details of that event. It'll be good, hopefully. So come watch us talk about video games. And if you don't, we'll probably record it or something and put it up.
I was just going to ask if you guys were going to record it.
I think so. I mean,
that seemed to be the buzz. I mean, there's a lot of
we're also going to upload a 1080p video of it, which will make your computer probably fall apart.
Are we going to do that?
No, we probably shouldn't do that.
Oh, that's not then.
Yeah.
Cool. So
people ask for a video, but no.
Yeah. That'll be great. Yeah. If I was just a fan or just a guy living in Seattle, I'd probably go. So it's
going
to be good.
But you aren't going.
You might never know. I'm not, you know, who knows? You can't plan what I am going to do.
You probably should if it's flying somewhere and staying in a hotel.
Don't be ridiculous, Chris.
Oh, well, video games.
So you've made mention a few times. You've beaten a lot of video games lately.
Are you the master of video games?
Yeah, suddenly I
you
have
are
like
a 12-year-old Fred Savage.
Is that what?
No, it's his autistic brother who beats all the games, and he
yeah.
Just,
oh, you're not Fred
yeah.
Savage.
You're
oh,
the
damn,
autistic kid,
hoping.
And then you have somebody
what
shilling
are
you,
talking
you out.
About?
The wizard. The wizard. The movie.
I know that there's a movie called that.
Oh my! You've never seen. Anyway. Don't worry about it. You're just the autistic kid. So,
Idle Thumbs, Chris Remo has never seen the video game film The Wizard.
Wow. Wasn't that about Nintendo?
Yes.
Well, Nintendo makes a prominent corporate appearance.
I remember it existing. Anyway, I have beat a lot of video games recently.
So, out of all of those, if I was going to take one out of your 10, or
I don't know
how
it's
many,
actually 10, some number.
Whatever. Your double-digit number. What would you slide across the table to me? In an illicit fashion.
Like to recommend you play?
Yeah.
You
know what I like? You know what I'm down with?
That's a good question. I don't really know. I wish I...
Which one did you hate?
They all had good and bad points. I just finished Assassin's Creed 2.
They're all kind of
recently.
Terrible.
You finished what?
Assassin's Creed 2.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm sure a lot of other people finished a while ago. But that was Assassin's Creed and Assassin's Creed 2 as well, both of which I've completed for some reason, are games that are really interesting to me theoretically.
I hear that it's a historical fiction wrapped in a crazy sci-fi conspiracy thriller.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
I hear that.
It's like a pizza bite.
Pizza yeah, wrapped it's inside like that. Less pizza in it, but it's a bite.
Well, it's Italian.
That's
so
sort of.
I think
yeah.
the
speaking of which, if anyone who's listening has not played Assassin's Creed 2 yet and is going to, or if you haven't finished it or something, you should change the language track to Italian because it makes the game way better. It's really cool to actually play the game with a full, you know, all
that's,
the dialogue
they include
and everything.
The Italian cast in the American release.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Which is really cool.
That's a really good choice.
It really is. Maybe all those performances are terrible. I don't know. I don't speak Italian. That all sound pretty awesome to me. So that was a cool choice on Ubisoft's part. But it's a weird Assassin's Creed is a weird game to me. Like I really like the idea of historical fiction and I wish there were more of it in games, but I wish that games weren't so insecure about everything that they feel this need to like hedge their bets by surrounding it in this crazy fucking like computer sci-fi nonsense, like full of weird things, like we're hacking the system yeah. and it's the brain interface is neurons and it's
yeah.
like
it would be too bold to say
you guys program computers to make video games, like shouldn't you be the people most sensitive to like bullshit yeah. pseudo computer language? Like that always surprises me.
You and I talked about this and it was ultimate armchair narrative design, unfortunately, but just sort of the notion that if instead of there being this crazy overarching conspiracy, if it had just been first game was in the Middle Ages and the second game was someone in Renaissance Italy stumbling across the papers or the story of that and picking up
yeah,
the thread,
that would be amazing.
It'd be really cool.
Yeah, whereas
or it's the same guy who keeps jacking in.
Yeah, the problem with that is that it like increases it, like it just sort of inherently devalues what's happening in the actual main component of the game because you know that it's all just this prescribed thing that you're
so
going
if you
through,
die in the
just...
game, you don't die for real in this?
No, you just wake up groggy.
You just go back to the checkpoint like any other video game except there's cool computer stuff that comes onto the screen when it happens. Mm. I mean, that's really the only difference.
Well, I mean, I would also argue, and this might be bold, but like if they were to do it your way, where it's just like you decouple it from the Matrix bullshit.
Yeah,
like, I mean, I would argue that maybe it makes the IP more valuable because you can take it out of that context of the game and maybe bring it elsewhere to an audience that has no interest in jumping on rooftops and snapping necks, but wants to.
You mean
see
like
it.
A film or something, or do you mean another?
Yeah, a film yeah. or anything? Yeah. You know, like
the miniseries.
I mean, it's unfortunate that like.
But people would still like that in a film. You're making a mistake. What people would love is you're a crazy assassin who then a crazy glitch happens and then you're on a table with a weird eye looking at you.
Yeah, I mean, key demos.
If Christopher Nolan directs it.
But I thought it was really interesting. Like, I'm not going to say what movie I went and saw because it's embarrassing. But I was sitting
there
with
Predators?
It might have been Predators. In my defense, there was drinking involved before, during, and
whatever,
after.
Whatever, you saw Predators.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean anything.
It made it more enjoyable, but Predator. We're watching the trailers and there's a new Resident Evil movie coming out uh-huh. and I'm with a girl who doesn't play video games at all, to the point where she was like, I don't really know what you do. Maybe you should like show me a cool video game sometime. Like, I don't know what a cool one is.
Right.
So it's like, oh, well, we will do that. But,
so we're
sitting
Aliens
there.
Versus Predator and be like, you know, we saw that movie.
Remember that? It's like half of that, but only one Predator and more. Anyway, she leans over in the middle of this trailer and goes, was this based on a video game? And it's the new Resident Evil movie.
Nice.
I'm like, yes, it is actually Resident. She's like, oh yeah, it's the thing with the you know, and like it's just so funny that like you can tell aesthetically, oh, this came from the game space.
Yeah.
Where I feel like if you decoupled Assassin's Creed from its again Matrix bullshit,
that's a good point.
You might be able to bring it to a different audience without them thinking, oh, this came from an Xbox.
Yeah. What you're saying is reinforced by the fact that they have this idea for this thing set in history and this whole conspiracy that, you know, spans thousands of years. And because it's a video game, like, they're falling into the exact trap you're describing, which is, oh, we've got to surround it with video game bullshit. Like, there's, you know what I mean? There's no, it's not, it's, it probably wasn't even a question. I mean, it probably was just a given, you know, that you can't just I'm not going to set a game in 1342 or whatever. Like, what? Are you crazy? It's a fucking computer mind shenanigan. Like, you know, this is what you do in a video game.
But you actually enjoy, you've enjoyed running around in a city.
Yeah,
I really like
running around. And
owning a dude.
Like, the basic mechanics in these games are so weird and hilarious to me. Like, I love anything where you can run around and explore. Like, I really like Crackdown for the same reason. I mean,
oh, for sure.
You just run around on rooftops and
grabbing
jump around
shit.
And explore things. Yeah, and grab things. And, like, that stuff is good. And when the games encourage you to explore it and actually encourage you to take advantage of the verticality, I like that stuff. It's good. And Assassin's Creed does a pretty good job of that. And I like it. It's fun. Like, I put up with a lot of repetitive bullshit in Assassin's Creed and Assassin's Creed 2 because I like running around so much. It's way more fun most of the time for me than the combat in those games, which I don't really enjoy. But there are weird, like, the things that they've chosen to allow you to do in the world are so strange. Like, you can hold, and part of it emerges out of the fact that they go for a really context-sensitive control scheme. You know, so like they have
press X to flip over a guy and snap his neck, like that sort of stuff.
Or like drop down from a ledge. Those are like the same thing. So okay. I'm like, the B button is hand, which means anything from let go of a ledge with your hand or fucking stab a guy in the face with your sword with your hand. Like,
or eat
so
a
depending
croissant.
On the context you're
with
in,
your yeah,
like
that's a mouth.
Very different things will happen. Mm. It's really weird. And so as a result of that, when you're walking around, you know, for example, you can hold down A, I think, and your guy will walk quickly. For some reason, walk quickly is also the button for pickpocket things.
So you're just sort of walking quickly,
down, yeah,
but then occasionally robbing people.
Just like, but because of the way this game works, your guy will just contextually grab into the person's pocket and do it. So you, as you're just holding
maybe
this
you're role playing
and quickly walking through the city, your guy is just like frantically sticking out his hands into everyone's, stealing everything. Like just like in a cartoon, you know, where his hands are just like bing, 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 and the little money signs are just right. popping out of people's heads. Like on a fucking it's Tony Hawk like combo chain,
right?
Like,
you found all hidden tapes actually,
right?
Yeah,
it's really weird. And like the best part is you can hire prostitutes in this game, but the thing you hire prostitutes to do is not to be a prostitute really, it's to walk around with you basically. So like you hire prostitutes four at a time. That's the only way to hire prostitutes.
Oh, of course. It's,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And
one in room.
What you do with them when you hire them is you stand in the middle of them and they walk around with you.
That's
so you
badass.
Basically you hire a prostitute posse to just hang out with and walk around, and they do all these like seductive hand motions. Like it looks like you're in the middle of a weird music video or something as you walk around. And
you're
these...
in the Mo Money Mo Problems video.
Yeah, exactly.
This needs the puffy suit.
And so if you do that while holding down the fast walk button, they'll match your speed, and you are just surrounded in this like shroud of prostitutes while you just reach into everyone's pocket and steal everyone's money in the town. It's like when you think about the fact that some designers had to like sit down and decide what they wanted your basic interactions to do, and like these are the, these
God
are the
bless
things.
Those
so
guys.
Is there are there videos of this at this point, because that it's well, sounds like people need to just
it's just,
like capture it's, that and then slow it down and put hilarious music behind
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
but do it from like so you rotate the camera around so you're watching him from the front,
right?
And then
walking,
you put the camera down to the ground and
yeah.
have it look up as your guy's like sauntering through
yeah.
town with his prostitutes just reaching into everyone's pocket.
Yeah, pretty much.
And the other thing you use prostitutes for, which is really handy,
mm-hmm.
is to distract
mm-hmm.
is to distract guards
oh.
like with the promise of prostitution,
lame.
Except they just hang out. Which is really good because it means you get to, you know, steal things the guards are guarding. Which, by the way, the guards guard, like, just fucking chests of money that just sit on the ground in this
So
store.
I'm just
like,
paid to stand here.
They didn't
here.
Have banks.
People,
the banking system hadn't been invented yet. What do you want?
I thought, didn't the Medicis have a bank? I thought the whole point of the Medicis was
Look,
they had
a in
bank.
The sci-fi
yeah,
version
yeah, yeah,
of this,
yeah.
history's been changed.
Well, the you hang out with the Medici's. Like, you hang out with everyone.
Did they mention
you
banking
Medici's,
at any time?
You hang out with, like, fucking popes. You hang out with Leonardo da Vinci.
Popes?
Like, this is
so
multiple
you,
popes.
So you and the pope
that's not canonical.
Rolling through town with four prostitutes pickpocketing people.
This is one of those games where, like... Or
Chris
has
a way to make me
want to
play a game.
Theories where... Everyone in history is like part of the conspiracy. Like everyone you've ever heard of in history is actually the reason you've heard of them is because they're part of a conspiracy and they have like a magical item. Like it's one
Does
of those
Benjamin Franklin
it's one of
show
those,
up
like sub Dan Brown bullshit conspiracy. You know what I'm talking?
Right.
I'm sure
mm-hmm.
you've seen
yeah,
things
course.
That are like National Treasure,
yeah,
that
yeah.
kind of thing.
No, no,
well,
no.
Book of Secrets. The first one, you know, the first one.
The first one's bullshit. And the second one, Secrets.
But the, just, the,
El Libro de Secretos. I don't know if Secrets is that in Spanish. Go on.
But yeah, the I don't know. The whole, like, idea of guards being here just to hang out and, like, guard money that someone who has money is paying them to do. Like, right, or...
You could put the money in your house.
Right. And then have the guard guard that.
Which, nah, just put them out in the street.
Maybe it's to test their mettle. Maybe it's like a whole guard, like,
that's true.
School,
like,
thing.
See if they'll resist taking the money.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's a. I mean,
well,
I don't want to
failing then, because as soon as a prostitute, like, walks in front of their face, they rush off. Which,
well,
is,
are they
which
not
is,
men? I mean, do they not bleed?
That's true. Come they on. Are. They are men, and they do bleed. You can stab them, and they'll bleed.
Well, there you go.
But I mean,
so it's a comment.
You can
it's
avoid.
Actually a really smart
you
choice.
Avoid having to make them bleed by doing this. So as a result, I basically fucking churn through prostitutes in this game. By, like, I mean, seriously, like. If I'm ever walking around in Assassin's Creed 2, I've got prostitutes on me because
there's just so much snuggle bum goodness in this. With
no one knows what you're talking
churn
about.
Churn through prostitutes,
you'll be sampled.
Oh God!
There's this guy in our forums, Snuggle Bum, who
he's been making remixes of the last few episodes.
Yeah,
from time
good.
To time, when
including,
Chris says something like, "I will churn through prostitutes."
The highlight so far being I fell off of a dinosaur fence. Featuring Steve Gaynor falling off of a dinosaur fence.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Anyway.
I didn't mean to derail.
Oh, no, it's fine.
But you do have an ability to make me want to play a game unlike any Metacritic score ever could. This Assassin's Creed
well, this
2
has-
could have a 99. I know it's well reviewed. I remember it being decently reviewed. But, I mean, it could be just the greatest game of the past 20 years. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll pick that up. Well, you know, but, like,
but now
right now,
like,
I'm
going to
stop by
on
the Best Buy that's open until midnight on the way home. Yeah, and just... Me and like Pope John Paul Uno.
You can't hang with the Pope, unfortunately. I mean, like in cutscenes, you sort of can.
So
when
wait,
you come in contact with them, but you can't just like walk around with them on the streets.
Are there any? Are there any bishops I can roll deep with? Perhaps.
I mean, I don't. You, there's no party system except for prostitutes and like thieves, basically.
That'll do.
Yeah,
that'll do.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a weird game. Assassin's Creed is a weird series. It's very like. The amount of like geographical volume in these games, you know, you go to Florence and Tuscany and Venice, like these huge
you
fucking
take the
things.
Eurorail, get
that,
a Europass.
They didn't do that yet.
Oh,
but like there just aren't enough
like
systems
banks.
That work in interesting ways to like justify that. You know, you end up. I mean, by the time you're done with the first city in this game, even before then, you've pretty much run into all the interactions that are going to happen. Yeah,
you've
like
seen all the offerings. Now it's just go change the
right.
address.
Like once you lure the guards away with the prostitute once, like it's not really going to be different.
Well, I had that same complaint with
that.
Assassin's Creed 1.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
Mean,
and they improved it for this game by having the missions come from like a larger set of possibilities. But the problem is at the most fundamental level, the actual systems of the world itself. Do not interlock enough in interesting ways to allow for just broadly emergent scenarios. You know what I mean? Like, what makes an open world game interesting is when just all the time there's systems going on that allow for a variety of things. And like, that happens for the first few hours of Assassin's Creed 2, but like, eventually, okay, fine, I got the guards to be distracted by the thieves or the prostitutes or whatever, and all right, I got them to go away, and now I found my way into this room, and now I stole the gold. Like, you're going to run out of really fascinating shit to occur. Although I will say, like, every once in a while you will get an amazing moment where, you know, you assassinate a dude in the middle of a public square or something, you know, you stab him in the face and then you like just duck into a group of monks as they're walking away, and then as you are like walking underneath an archway, this whole group of guards is like running the other way past you, and you're just casually walking like away from them. And that happened to me once in this whole game. But it was the most amazing thing when it happened, because that's the kind of thing you want.
You sure. You lived the Assassin's Creed 1 trailer.
I was just going to say, you lived the trailer,
oh,
which is,
I mean,
that was just, that, those moments, I feel like the systems are built around producing singular moments like that, which I think is probably their shortcoming. I mean, I don't know, I have no experience building a game like that.
Well,
but like, I feel, whereas other sort of open world emergent games, they're not authoring to an end like that, where I saw that in the trailer. You know, I'm like, oh, so
right.
You just played...
But see,
I was going to say the same thing Jake did.
The thing is, when Assassin's Creed 2 doesn't achieve that result, it's usually not that interesting. Like, usually it's
that's
just, oh, you've devolved into hacking, like, 50 fucking guards with a sword.
Yeah,
which
played,
is always
yeah.
the same every single time. It is never... You know what I mean? Like, if you don't reach that pinnacle of that incredible emergent moment, it's just whatever. Like, it's just...
Was Assassin's Creed built on the same tech as the Prince of Persia Sands of Time series? Or like an evolution of that, an offshoot?
I really have no idea.
Because
the slightest clue.
It seems like it's always, it's another Ubisoft title, and it's always seemed like it had that exact same, that same dichotomy of sweet and lame that the Prince of Persia games did, of just when you're grappling around and sort of, you know, doing weird things and combining things, it's always cool. And then once you have to actually sword a guy, you don't want to play it. At least I don't.
No, that's totally true. And that's that. Nice segue. I beat Prince of Persia: The Forgotten Sands. It was one of the other games. I forgot that was already.
You really liked that, right?
I really liked it for the most part. Yeah, that that game is like total, just kind of greatest hits of Prince of Persia: The Sands of Time. Yeah, like it's not. It doesn't really ever distinguish itself in a really amazing way, but I liked it more than any of the other Prince of Persia games
just
since Sands of Time.
Just because it's more like Sands of Time?
Yeah, it's got that subdued atmosphere to it. It's got it's much more platforming focused. It's not like the previous one where it's just absurdly easy. It has the...
My criticism of the previous one was not that it's absurdly easy. Like, it just didn't feel good to me.
Yeah, it also
there was
just
so much
yeah.
from a... I mean, I loved the fact that they were willing to go out and, like, make it look completely different and do kind of a bold, like, both visual style and tonal thing, but... I mean, if it doesn't, that's the risk you take, I guess, when it doesn't land. But it felt different than that, is what you're saying.
It felt closer to Sands of Time. It was very similar to Sands of Time. It even seemed like they used a lot of the same assets as Sands of Time, honestly, except higher, a little higher res, obviously. But yeah, it was fun. You run around. You climb up walls. I don't know.
I saw the stopping of freezing of water and climbing.
Yeah, that stuff is cool. That stuff is interesting. I kind of went back and forth on that. Like in a lot of cases, that stuff is just like. You press A here and now you can go across because the water is frozen.
That,
but they start mixing in a lot of timing stuff, right? So like you freeze the water now because you've got to swing on the thing. But as soon as you leap off of the thing, there's a frozen ice water wall in front of you that you have to let melt really quickly. You know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it, but the problem is
it's
that
more
mainly
of like Simon, where you're sticking,
yeah, but
you're
exactly,
stacking
it mainly ends up just
to,
being a dexterity test as opposed to
so
like
it mostly just made you want to play Portal 2 more.
Yeah. Jesus Christ, do I want to play Portal 2.
Oh, man.
Goddamn.
We're just going to take a moment and just have ourselves the moment of the Portal 2.
Oh, wait, you're talking about a different thing.
Oh. I mean, what were you talking
just,
about?
You're
going to fart to Portal 2?
Well,
what was that?
You know, just sort of relax. Just, you know.
Portal 2 does not make me relax. The opposite. I'm unrelaxed.
Tenses up your muscles?
Each and every one, Chris.
Yeah, all of them?
Have you seen the video? Oh, you've played,
played it.
Oh, you
you've
son of a
lived
bitch.
It. You visited an Ember Science Laboratory. You lived the dream of seeing an E3 demo of Portal
That's
2.
That's why he looks so happy.
It.
Look at
the
him.
Game.
He's beaming.
Did you play it? Did you beat it?
Let's hold him down and just...
I beat some levels.
Never mind.
I didn't beat the video game.
I'm just talking to the readers over here myself.
Sean Veneman in the right channel.
Yeah, I played...
You sat down and just beat the game. Just like you do at every press event. You sit down. You're
just...
Like,
I'm video game champ coming in.
Like when you beat Red Dead Redemption at whatever convention that was, and then you sat down and just crushed, apparently, Portal 2.
Yeah, sort of.
Spoilers here?
It was kind of the other way around, because I played the co-op part with Eric...
Wolpaw?
Yes. Who is the writer, or the co-writer on this one, and he was the writer on Portal 1.
I just sat down and
so you sort of had the Resident Evil 5 co-op experience with this guy?
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, because he'd done this demo a million times. And so we sort of sat, like, they've got a good system in there for co-op in Portal 2 where you can point at a, you know, anywhere on the screen and hit
You were mentioning this. You can
some
sort of,
kind of, number,
you can sort of
yeah.
paint a dot on the wall, basically.
Exactly.
God, that's
and
a
it'll
really
be a little
sharp
that indicates, you know, either look here or jump here or make a portal here or whatever. You know, they just got
can
a little
you change
few
that
symbols.
Glyph to... Oh, you can.
Well, so they've just got a few different symbols. You choose which one you want to tag on the...
Oh, man. That's
really
that's,
good.
Well, I mean, when you told me about that the first time, like, when you said, like, oh, you can paint a dot on the wall.
It randomly selects one.
No,
oh,
no,
this
no,
time
no.
You
but that's very... I mean, that in itself feels very... like revolutionary in the cooperative first person space, like being able to communicate with a non-destructive action.
Yeah. And non-verbal. Yeah.
Yeah. Very. But then like,
can
oh,
you upload
we're
a
also
spray?
Gonna give you a lexicon.
Upload a
what
spray?
The fuck?
Yeah. Can you upload a spray to paint with? So that people will start
jumping the dick.
Retarded. Yeah. Retarded yeah, was, little animated,
oh,
animated
so
valve sprays of a boob or a dick.
Jump to the scrotum. The scrotum.
Put a portal in this ball sack.
Like
you
a
could,
New Zealand
you could make
rugby
the goatsy
player.
Man in a really horrible way.
Oh,
I'm just saying.
So you and Wolpa were looking at dicks and butts, apparently.
That's true. We were doing that.
We're
firing portals into
the butts.
Then
after that, we decided to play Portal 2, the cooperative demo.
Oh,
and that was really fun. It's really different to Portal because, like, it was interesting, actually. They said the way that they originally approached the idea of doing Portal co-op was by thinking about when they would watch people play Portal 1, and they played them like how people used to play, like, adventure games on the same screen, where one person would be over your shoulder.
Used to play.
Well, I mean,
like, people still do play adventure games.
I don't think people play them in that way probably as often these days.
There was a thread about that on the Telltale Games forums, and some people do apparently still play them.
That's
like
good.
That.
I'm glad
to
hear that.
With their sick and dying fathers in the hospital. So, go on.
Thanks, Famous.
They designed it based watching people play over the shoulders of other players.
Right. And so it really does feel very different because the complexity of solving a portal puzzle with two people is like, the number of possibilities are more than twice as many because you've got four portals instead of two. Like, everything just gets squared, basically, in terms of how complex it can get.
But those portals don't overlap mechanically.
No, you each have your own totally separate set of, like, enter and exit portals.
Do they color them differently?
Yeah, they're different colors.
Sorry, it's a stupid question to ask. But...
I'll trump you on that. What color is the second player's portals?
I don't remember.
If it was purple and green, I'd like that a lot.
I don't remember.
So Valve, texture swap. Thank you.
Is the way, I mean, when you describe it like adventure games, I imagine like there's a period of time in, especially the more complicated Portal 1 levels, where you just kind of are almost just wandering around surveying the space. And does that sort of thing happen where it sort of ends up two people just sort of wandering around looking at stuff, and then a few people, then you fire out your portals, execute a thing, and then sort of just go back
fail,
to this weird sort of
again,
this weird like, sort of asynchronous wandering around again for a while?
I didn't play it playing with him
because he knew how to do it.
Yeah, he's like, come over here and
put a portal here.
But I think that's kind of the vibe when
you
describe
with
that.
The crotchety old guy who'd been stuck in that the facility for 6 years. It's like, yeah, you just put the portal on the ground, jump off the fucking thing, and it's
a bridge
whatever.
Goes flying out.
Don't even look over there, stupid.
Yeah, I mean it was basically that, which kind of sucked to an extent because I just wanted to walk around
sucks.
These rooms
yeah,
and
I
like try things.
Meanwhile, a bunch of readers are, oh, so you played Portal 2 with Eric Wolpa and it sucked. I wish I could do that. I would like to do that. I've never met the man, but
well,
I like
you can
all
do it when
work.
It comes out. I know you can.
I can just call Eric and be like, hey, dude, you and me. Put a goatsy thing on the wall and I can jump through it.
Chris Ramo said you can put a goatsy on the wall and jump through it.
That's true. Confirmed. Goatsy on the wall.
Goatsy confirmed.
Goatsy wall.
What's funny is, back to the story about Predators, when I was saying, what's a cool game you like?
Right.
I remembered you saying, like, the adventure game over the shoulder aspect of Portal. So this person is going to be seeing Portal and she's never
They're
seen
going
it.
To be seeing goatsy on the wall.
You're gonna mod,
no, I'm
going to
go
gonna
ahead and keep the
goatsy
sprays off the... Yeah, no mods, probably. We're going to do it straight. We're going to do it not blue, if you will. It'll be regular. So it'll be interesting to see somebody who hasn't seen a video game since maybe an SNES Mario Kart be introduced Portal. But it was only based on the fact that you planted in my head the over-the-shoulder aspect of Portal from a design standpoint, which I really, really like. More games should be like that. The more you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, we're just kind of moving away from that with online multiplayer and everything. I mean, I think increasingly people are less likely to think of video games as a thing you do in the same room now. But maybe not. I mean, maybe that's not the case. That's the sense I've been getting. I certainly used to play same screen a lot more than I do now.
Well, I mean, out of necessity.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Yeah. You know, but I mean, because you did it out of necessity, it created like strong memories of doing that. And then that kind of reinforces behavior. But then when you don't have to anymore, it's just, eh.
Yeah.
It's
well, there's a limitation of that for sure. I remember walking over here. One of the first times I've ever been to your apartment, like you and Steve are playing some dumb game together. And like, but it was, you were doing the over the shoulder thing. And I was
it was Army of Two, too.
Yeah, it was. And I was like,
You complained
man.
That we were making fun of it.
Oh, yeah, on a cast, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I'd never do that. I don't roll into the wall 100 million times and think how dumb the animation looks. I play these games seriously. But I remember walking in and being like, I wish I had a friend to come over and we could play same screen dumb shit together. Like, you do kind of lament those days of being in high school and playing
dumb shit
controller.
Together.
Well, you know.
Yeah,
it was Tony Hawk.
You know, when Halo 1 was only same screen, I mean, some of my best multiplayer memories ever are of playing four player same screen Halo 2v2. Mm-hmm. Like, that, I mean, those are like amazing, wonderful gaming memories for me. I mean, that, and like, that's just, admittedly, it's super convenient to play online. And I've been a PC gamer my whole life, so I've always played online. Like, that's not, like, a new thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there is a certain in addition to having both now, I just have the online, because who the hell is ever going to come over and play four-player Halo now? Like, that's just not... I mean, that just never even enters any discussions these days.
Yep.
At least with me.
It's weird for me because I guess most of my friends were PC gamers.
Yeah.
Other than maybe Mario Kart on the Super Nintendo. Basically, it was either the same screen adventure game.
That was true for me until Halo.
Basically. Or we would have a LAN.
Right.
Which is a completely different thing.
Yeah, LANs are a crazy thing. I wonder if that still exists.
At PAX, they do.
That's true.
I hear you guys are doing a panel at PAX.
That's true.
Hmm.
We spent way too much time at PAX East just playing TF2 on the giant LAN.
Yeah.
That was good.
It was good.
Anyway, Portal 2 looks fucking good.
Yeah, it does look really good.
Man.
We didn't talk about a whole lot of it just now. We got diverted a million times, but Portal 2 is kind of old at this point.
Yeah, it is. Everyone's seen this.
Portal 2 is old news, but
I mean, but everyone, you know, it's not like we have more insight at this point than other people do.
Yeah, no, but just, I was down on Portal 2 till all the E3 stuff came out.
Until it actually came in front of your face.
Fuck.
It looks so good.
Fucking, oh.
Go on, yeah? You're doing what I did with Red Dead Redemption on this exact same podcast.
Yeah.
Just sit here and go, oh, go on, Chris. Don't stop talking. That is.
Okay.
Oh. This has been kind of a charge to this podcast already. This is an effervescence of grossness that... If we could just run it through a slimy film, like a mucus filter, if we just take it all out, that'd be nice, nice and squeaky clean on the other side. But that's not going to happen. So enjoy, readers.
Anyway, maybe we should take a break.
Sure.
A break would be fantastic.
We can break it up
with breaks.
With break.
You want to break up the podcast? It's over
forever.
It's the last one.
We'll be doing some more episodes and we have a PAX panel. That's the last episode.
It probably is.
Video games.
Too much sodium.
The Ides of Thumbs.
Ooh, is it close to the... It's the fucking Ides of July!
It's the
Ides of July! Yes! Oh, God bless America?
Maximum Ides.
Oh, Max Ides. I like that there would be a hitman named Max Ides who only shows up on the 15th of every month.
It's you can call him in, but, you know.
Max Ides, I need this guy killed.
All right, but I got a schedule to keep here.
Wait a week.
I don't have that much time. Do you know my fucking name? And click.
Hi, Max. It's me again. And I'm so sorry. You're right. I understand. The 15th will be fine. 12:01, perhaps, just to really expedite the murder.
Can you just get right on that?
That'll be okay. I got my schedule pretty booked solid that day, so, you know, I'll squeeze you in.
The preferred time is, in fact, noon.
That's only for major kills. That's only for, like, heads of state.
Yeah, that's true.
The idea of him in a clock tower, just looking at his watch, and just as the seconds tick down, staring down the barrel. Oh.
He's in the, underneath the clock face.
Yeah.
Right.
Better.
Boom.
That's gong. The chime.
Right.
Gong. The 12th gong. Does that start at noon, or does it start...
That's some good eyes.
At
the first dong.
Or does it land on...
He'd kill him on the first dong.
That's true. He'd kill...
That's always been a question for me.
That is when he'd kill them.
But movies that do that. Movies that do that are like... The bomb's going off at 1 p.m. or 12.
And 1 p.m.
Dong, boom. Not a bad example. But the movies that do that, it's always like... The hero's running at that first dong.
Right.
And then
the hero's running from first dong.
Fucking Max Ides doesn't wait around for that
dongs
bullshit.
In, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, Max Ides only needs one dong before he makes his kill.
I didn't know if Big Ben did the math, but I guess he doesn't.
No. Mm. Big Ben is Max Ides' sidekick. Also, he's the guy who calls him and gives him his job.
Except it's a little kid.
Yeah.
Max Ides.
Max Ides and Big Ben.
Oh, fuck yeah.
You mean fuck this.
Video game.
Whatever. It's too bad that Apple's actual response is you're doing it wrong.
That is too bad.
Yeah.
Well, also, their actual response to me saying this.
Oh, well, the first response was you're doing it wrong. The second response is maybe we're calculating the bars wrong. Like, what? Maybe
reception's not even real.
Maybe there's a cord coming out of your phone that's invisible.
Maybe.
Maybe you are fucking calculating the bars wrong in addition to fucking not having a signal.
Right. What we meant to say was if you touch the phone, the bars go down. Oh, wait. No. But they do.
I mean, Consumer Reports did a test that shows that it is, in fact, actual signal quality. It's not just
fucking
bars. I love
that Consumer Reports occasionally is like, we exist still, and we are testing this phone. Like, whoa, Consumer Reports.
It's really good that they
exist. I love Consumer Reports. They're badass.
Like, these days, they don't accept advertising. Like,
they're still really good.
They don't fucking do any of that. But yeah, that's
they bought Consumerist, which is awesome. That old Gawker blog.
That's right. I saw that.
Yeah. I still read Consumerist every day.
I really hope that there remains a market for that kind of company, because they have nothing in common with the way anyone does business today, which is basically sell every single shred of your credibility for a huge fucking flash ad of a man parachuting onto your fucking front page. Like, there's no, I mean, like, there's no, the Consumer Reports model does not fucking exist. Like, no. That is going out the goddamn window. Like, we thought it was great when we got rid of fucking pop-ups. What we have now is a million times worse than pop-ups, because now we just have these flash monstrosities that pop up a full HD trailer in the middle of your fucking face when you're halfway through reading an article.
Video games.
So we're back.
We're back. Wow. I'll tell you what didn't happen about during that break. Chris and I didn't get an ideological debate about the state of journalism. We talked about Max
Ides.
That's right. We talked about Max
Ides. Yeah. Coming soon. From idlethumbs.net.
So
we're back. I played a game.
What game did you play?
On the
Sean
Xbox Live Arcade. I played Snoopy Flying Ace.
What?
Fuck you guys. It's fucking
why
good.
You play Snoopy Flying? Go ahead.
I'll tell you why.
At E3 years ago, was it Namco Bandai? I played a Snoopy
Smart
game.
Smart Bomb is the developer. They're good.
The one I played, I think, was by Namco.
They might have been the publisher, but Smart Bomb, I think, developed the Red Baron one as well. As this is a successor, I believe. I mean,
I'm glad you know so much about this franchise.
What? I did a little research.
Well, how did you end up with this?
So, I guess it's really based on my video game playing habits.
No, Five would have to go back.
I have to get in the Wayback Machine. Talk about when I first read Peanuts.
I thought this would make a sweet video game.
This would make a sweet flying video game based on Crimson Skies.
Visceral Games, Peanuts.
But,
it's in the fucking game.
Oh, remember that woman? Oh, God, that homeless woman? We were walking to that,
What?
Oh, no, this is hilarious. We were all walking to this. We were walking to that coffee shop with Robert, like, two nights ago, and she goes, "You guys are all Charlie Browns out here."
Oh,
I
shit.
I just looked at her
owned.
And went, wah, wah, wah. Because, like, I think she just thought we all looked sad.
Yeah. You know? But what she actually meant was we all were bald with one little curly hair and
were
had yellow shirts
like,
with zigzaggy black stripes.
Jake was wearing his zigzaggy yellow shirt, yeah.
So only
like
I'm
does.
Charlie Brown.
He had a tiny little yellow bird.
Were you wearing that?
Yeah, I was dressed in my Charlie Brown cosplay.
That's good.
But she accidentally thought
if
that we
you
were
go
all
as Charlie Brown,
then.
I would go as Pigpen for Halloween. You have my fucking word. Oh. On the cast.
Jake's too tall to be Charlie Brown.
No, but
that's
I mean,
the real reason.
Yeah, Jake's not 3.5 feet tall, so there's no way you can pull off a Charlie Brown costume.
God knows he's tried. I mean,
yeah.
A big bird really is just giant Woodstock.
That's true. Woodstock, like the little bird? Yeah, I guess
yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. The more you know.
So
you can cosplay as Woodstock, and then you can just use a building to be Big Bird. So that'll be fine.
Use a building?
Well, you know.
Something just set a large like, thing next yeah, to me yeah. so that people see. That, yeah.
You're small.
For scale?
Anyway, we should get back to the more important subject, Snoopy's Flying Ace on XBLA.
I don't like your
Snoopy
tone.
Snoopy presents
off.
The Flying Ace.
This is a sarcastic tone. This is a
Snoopy's
quality video game.
Game.
It's really good. So how did you even get to that? I'm so glad you asked, Christopher. Yeah. Like, my video game playing habits are almost all XBLA. There's some PSN, but my PlayStation's in Adam's room, so I have to, like, crash my roommate's room to play my PlayStation. Which is not, you know, like, if he's with a girl, that's kind of awkward, generally. It depends. There was one girl who was really into Far Cry 2.
And
was
really? Like, for real?
Yeah. She was like,
sweet.
When are you going to get to that hang gliding part?
Sounds pretty
I was like, put on
awesome.
Some clothes, sweetheart. Come over here. I love the hang
I've
glider.
Got the 360 version.
It looks like crap in the PS3. I've already talked about that, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Your neighbors went crazy. They're big.
They're like,
they're big
no,
PS3
great on the PS3.
You live next to the fanboys. But, I don't know. I guess Jack's it's the fact that I just don't. Like, I have a real big aversion to spending money in large chunks. I will spend money in small chunks until I'm bankrupt, but yeah. I have a, so like...
You'd buy, like, 30 copies of Snoopy's like, Flying Ace.
Yeah, yeah, I'll buy gift copies for everybody.
On, like, Rollaway or whatever they call it, whatever
it's Layaway?
Called. Layaway, God.
Like, it's...
Is that a thing that still exists?
Like, I'm at the Sears yes. with my mom in 1989?
Yeah, Sears and Toys R Us will still lay away stuff for you.
Yeah.
Trust me.
I'm gonna swing set on layaway at Sears.
So
two more months.
So basically, you don't like buying video games, is what you're saying.
I mean, it's just, I think it's a psychological barrier of the $60 price point. But the Xbox Live Arcade is perfect for me, and also just my lifestyle. It's like I get home and I'm tired. I'm like, I do want to play a video game, and I don't want to play everything that I have. So
I
want right to
play
there.
Snoopy.
But I mean, I had
Snoopy,
heard
the video
through
game
the, through the tubes that it was a quality 3D. Video game. So I bought. I didn't buy. I just got the demo, and and added it to my XBLA repertoire, if you will. But it's really fantastic if you like Crimson Skies meets Mario Kart, essentially. Mario Kart Arena.
And so everyone who likes that combination.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big game. Subset, I think,
yeah.
of people. I mean, Mario Kart itself is a giant circle on the Venn diagram of fun.
That's Chris,
I think Jake can agree.
It's a good
game. You probably really like it. I mean, animation is great. It's really well presented.
There are
presented.
Also very few flight combat games these days.
It's really, really
simple. It's not a
genre
that is like
the moment.
Big.
What's funny is the moment you sit down.
Are you flying around on a doghouse?
I don't. It might be an unlockable doghouse. I really don't know. I played it
Wait,
last
really?
Night. I'm new.
It doesn't start with Snoopy flying on a doghouse?
No. You're in like a biplane, World War I style, and you've got giant cartoon.
No
bi. Look, I'm just saying.
Wait, is he dreaming this in his head? Because that would be an amazing segue.
Again, I don't know the canon.
He's
jacked
what he's doing in.
In
well, no, but I mean, you've read fucking Peanuts.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what
yeah.
Snoopy's
well,
doing.
I've read
right?
fucking Peanuts.
Yeah, I've read the X-rated version of Peanuts that came out in 1978 in the back of the Hustler magazine.
Yeah,
it was great. You don't know what Charlie
Classic.
Brown does to Ola.
Have they put that up on the PSN comic store yet?
No, it's on its way, probably. It's cool. on iPad, though.
Yeah.
What the fuck was I talking about before you got into like
you're talking about how I'd like this
slash
game.
Porn? I mean, there's just so much of it is well presented. Like just even the opening screen is just a majestic Snoopy like with a biplane behind him.
That sounds pretty good.
No, but like the IP is really well used, and it's just
for what end?
All ends. Name an end, and it's great.
I don't know. This, like, what does it have to do with? I mean, not that this is like a sore point for me or anything.
What the fuck does this have to do with Peanuts?
No, I'm just actually curious.
There better be a goddamn Christmas special.
I'm curious because that comic strip could have almost nothing less to do about flying around shooting things.
Except Snoopy dreams when he fights the Red Baron.
Yeah. It's a
you
giant.
You slip and go, ah!
No, nobody yanks a football out from in front of
but,
you.
But his dreams about that, it's like this weird, like when he comes out of it, it's this weird crushing moment of like self-realization and like, oh, I guess I'm not that guy.
Look,
like,
I mean, I will go through the entire
like,
game.
Like Peanuts is a depressing comic. It's not, you know what I mean? Like it's a weird thing.
I will go through every nook and cranny of the game and report back.
Okay.
About like,
I mean,
canonical.
If it's just fun to fly around, it doesn't really matter.
And
but,
like,
yeah.
if there's like some sort of like broader context to the entire,
I don't think there will
combat,
be. I just think it would be amazing
fight.
If that was like what they did for their ostensibly kids game. Is like have
Snoopy
the
wakes up and
is
like, oh no, I'm just a
but
dog
like,
on
what's
my
great
house.
About it is
I would
I
enjoy
got,
that.
As I got, oh man, I was being dominated by this guy whose name was Bloody Fish.
Oh, so
Taco.
you're playing
a kids game.
Is this an NPC or?
It's very multiplayer driven.
Okay.
I mean, the same like I don't know. Did you play Battlefield 1943? On the Xbox Live Arcade.
I like to call it the Xbox Live Arcade.
Well, it is the Xbox Live Arcade.
I like calling it that. I call it that in news stories. The Xbox Live Arcade. It's good.
That's cool. It's like the Google.
Like my dad now saying the Google.
Yeah, but see, Google's a noun, whereas Xbox Live, you sort of, in that phrase, you treat it as an adjective. So it's like, you're referring to an arcade.
It
this
is the arcade
the
that's
Xbox
on
Xbox Live
yeah,
Arcade.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. And this
like
one features
arcade.
A Snoopy game, just to make it feel even more like a parent would call it the Xbox Live Arcade.
You're playing the Snoopy game on the Xbox Live Arcade?
Yeah.
Badass.
John Vandeman says
so
yes.
So anyway, this bloody whatever.
That guy named, well, it's funny. This you're like, you're playing a kid's game. And I'm like, well, I got dominated by a guy named Bloody Fish Taco.
And then you hear this, faggot.
What? Yeah. Like, no, I keep the headset.
That was
totally
just the voiceover, though.
Yeah, it was actually just
that was
Snoopy.
Snoopy's dream.
Leaning over his left shoulder while flying the Red Baron to call me a faggot. Damn, Snoopy.
He says it in that voice.
That seems off brand, Snoop.
What?
And then he just goes, or whatever that sound is. Okay, so anyway, why do you like this game?
The controls are amazing. They're really tight. And I feel like it's got a depth of like
that will surprise you.
No, but I feel like there's a depth of the combat that I didn't grasp in one sitting, where it's like weapons are locking on and you can do special moves to undo their locks, and every sort of weapon that they give you out of the gate,
like a lock block,
you can lock block. That's right.
Cool.
Every weapon they give you out of the gate feels like it has very specific mechanics that you can master. They all kind of like, you can kind of pick your play style. So like, I remember there was like a crazy shotgun thing where you could like fly up behind somebody and just eviscerate their plane. Or you have more lock-on weapons. They have a giant...
You're like writing a press release right now.
Oh, am I really? Fuck, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
And I didn't want to tell you this,
Jake. Their unique combat
style. It's terrible
style.
That this is a really poor form to tell you. I'm actually leaving Telltale to go get Smart Bomb 2 weeks ago. So I'm actually there right now.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, I know I've been at my desk, but I've also been...
But you were secretly writing like press releases for Snoopy's Flying Ace.
<That's> correct.
I have, in fact, got this fact sheet here. This is the dry run for the Flying Ace faction.
I'm really surprised. Well, it's great that Chris is here because, like, I'm actually one of the first video game industry double agents now. It's like me and like Wes and Zampanella. Like, it's going to be that same sort of like.
And ruin my relationship with Smart Bomb and Telltale.
Fucking bastard. No, I mean, I don't mean to oversell it. I feel like I come on the cast a lot of times and say, this is the best game ever.
And they're like, okay, this guy is recommending Snoopy's Flying Ace at this
but,
point.
But I mean,
so.
If, like, there's certain
really
games that I really like.
No, guys.
What? Like, I mean, I liked Battlefield 1943. It was just enough multiplayer game that I could just sit there and play.
If you liked Battlefield 1943, you'll love Snoopy's
But it's, I really,
Flying
there's
Ace.
Something, there's an influx of these multiplayer games that are on the arcade that are just enough to keep you engaged for like 4 to 6 weeks and be deep enough, like, mechanically.
I feel like that's really dangerous. I mean, this is changing subject a little bit, I guess, but like in
I
terms
feel
like
of Snoopy's Flying Ace is dangerous to
no,
the
no,
industry.
No, I mean for the developers because
Tim Schafer over there talking about Kodak.
The way you're just the way you're describing it, like that sounds totally fine, like from the player's standpoint. I'm just mean if you're a developer and you're making a game that's really multiplayer focused, and it's like yeah, it's fine for like a month. I mean, that's just like a recipe to be like one more game on the multiplayer pile of games that just languish after their initial release period. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like
I
that.
What you're saying. That, I mean, I hope it gets
that's
the
such
thumb
a danger
bump.
If you make a multiplayer game.
I mean, I I'm an outlier. Like, I've still played Battlefield 1943, and the people who are still playing it
I mean, Battlefield is one of those games that, you know, is one of the ones that gets to be the long. See, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, Snoopy is probably not going to be that game. Like,
we don't know that, all right?
I mean,
whoa, Chris.
Like,
whoa, how dare you?
How
fucking dare you?
You know,
you don't
it's
know.
A classic of the ages.
What's
going to
be
I'm
great
saying.
Is on Idle Thumbs 10, the Snoopy situation, or whatever the fuck it's called, when you guys come back and be like, oh yeah, man, that was
the new Far Cry.
Yeah, I was playing Snoopy, and this hand grenade rolled down the hill because of emergent systems.
Oh man, dude, I was just let me tell you, dude, something emergent happened.
Oh man, I got a
it was
Snoopy.
Sweet.
Snoopy Flying Ace story.
Four people wrote in about additional
like,
emergent
imagine
events.
Imagine something emergent occurring. And that's what happened in this video game.
It emerged.
Can you even... I mean,
something emergent emerged.
It fucking emerged into my face.
You were going to say something about dreams?
What?
Yeah,
you're talking
I cut
about
you
how,
off.
How Snoopy having a dream was an amazing segue.
Oh, yeah, no. Okay,
because
you're
the
gonna
entire
take a segue
game
that into
of,
what?
Of driver, fucking driver San Francisco.
Oh my
if
God, we have to talk about driver San Francisco. Sorry, Snoopy Flying
know,
is good. Let's move
if
on.
If you didn't like catch... Driver San Francisco, if you didn't catch the existence of that game over E3, you need to look this shit up, because this is the game. This is what happens in Driver San Francisco. You play a guy who, this is a sequel to the other Driver games. So you're the same guy, his name is Tanner, hilariously, who's the same guy in the other
Driver
drivers.
Tanner.
And he's chasing after this man Jericho, which he does by bullet style hilly car chases through San Francisco in this game.
That's good.
I guess he's been...
Does he have the upside down holstered gun, like Bullet?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
Okay, he should.
I have not actually played any other Driver games because I just
you can sort
forgot
of...
about them. And then Driv 3 or made no one want to play Drivers. So now
that's
true. They're trying to bounce back, I guess, with Driver San Francisco. But so the idea is you're this guy, you're chasing this other man through the streets of San Francisco in like... I don't even understand how this works. Over the course of the whole game, I guess you're just serially... chasing this man or like chasing other people that would allow you to find out how to chase this guy.
You're
whatever.
Following up leads by chasing guys.
Exactly. So you're Sweet. You're doing Good. That on a repeated basis. Also, if it makes it easier for you to chase a guy, you can fucking plunge backwards out of your body into the sky and then from there plunge back down to Earth into another person in a car and possess somebody in a car and take over their car, including the people like in the passenger seat, who can then give you missions. They can give you things to do.
This is what Assassin's Creed 2 should have been.
Yeah. Chris, you're talking about this like it's crazy.
Well, okay, so you do this, you keep doing this. By the way, you can't fucking possess the person in Jericho's car, so that blows, right? Like, that seems
then
like...
you could listen in on his conversations and find out where he's going, or kill him.
That, you could just be him and kill yourself.
Why don't you just possess Jericho and drive his car off a cliff into
there's
the bay?
There's gotta be a narrative conceit, like, halfway into the first...
He's got concept. Mind blockers!
The narrative, the narrative fucking conceit is that...
You are Jericho. Jericho is Tanner.
I can't wait.
I'm not Finkel is Einhorn. Driver.
The fucking
you are him. Fuck you.
What?
That's what it is. Why did you spoil my ending that I wrote? I secretly write for the driver's.
Oh, oh really? You use the Ace Ventura twist. Nice.
What?
Finkel is Einhorn.
Finkel is
Einhorn.
Einhorn
is that's Finkel. True. Barf.
Jake is driver.
Yeah. You've kissed a man. Go on.
So you know all this crazy shit.
Ace Ventura. How are you not up on this?
I know Ace Ventura.
Sorry, go on.
I saw the movie in the theater.
Same, so did I.
With my father.
With my parents. It was awkward. There was that sex scene with the animals, and it was weird.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway.
So all this shit where you are, like, leaping into cars and everything. Apparently, the whole thing, your character is in a coma, and he's dreaming doing this. And the video...
So he doesn't even catch the guy?
Well, I don't know.
He wakes up, I know where Jericho is.
Like, what?
If that's the last scene, you're running through the streets of San Francisco with IVs trailing behind you.
Do you catch him for real? Does that happen? Like,
I hope so.
If Jericho never existed.
There's got to be a reason that this all happens in his head. Like, when he wakes up, is he holding the guy's neck? Did he, like, come into his room to check on him? Like, what?
I like Sean's idea where the guy actually just rips out of the hospital bed with just the IV, like, pole clanking behind him down the street, connected by a rubber hose.
Yeah, and he just runs to a warehouse where Jericho's got a pretty blonde girl at gunpoint. It's like, I knew you'd be here. Fuck yes.
That would be amazing.
If there's any time for a rewrite. Or maybe that's what happens.
No, yeah. Maybe it's even better than that. We just can't even picture it.
Well, this is the thing. Maybe. Like, they've successfully made me want to play their goofy video game.
Just because,
like,
you
want
to see the stupid bullshit, but you don't like Assassin's Creed 2. This is the same exact thing.
It's way different.
Whoa, no. He's in a coma. Jake.
This is the difference.
Driver is one, like, or at least this Driver game. I haven't played the other one, so maybe people who...
Here's the thing. He's in a coma in the year 2396. What do you think about that? What if that happens?
That would be stupider, probably. But, I mean, whatever. That's not the point. The point is...
I dreamt I was like
me,
a bullet.
Like, I mean, this is the whole game, right? Like,
a guy 400 years from now is a giant Steve McQueen fan. Yeah. That is his fucking fantasy. Yeah.
But no, like, the entire conceit of this is that. Assassin's Creed, that's not really true. Like, in Assassin's Creed, really, you're just playing a game in history, and they layer this shit on top of it.
I'm saying, if they were the same
in Assassin's Creed 2, you could fucking go into the Matrix and, like, go through a wall or something. You know what I mean? Like, would be stupid sci-fi shit there to back that up. It's not. It's just, we made a historical fiction game, but we don't have the balls to actually put it in history.
So you like that Driver San Francisco is secretly a lucid dream simulator.
I like that it's just, I like that Driver San Francisco appears
where you get
to be
sweet chases.
This is, no, I like that Driver San Francisco.
I'm saying that's actually cool.
Yeah. I like that it has the sort of like self-awareness to just be like, look, we know this is ridiculous. This is absurd. You're flying out of cars and flying into other cars and your guy's dreaming and you're catching a man. Like what? I like that the whole game is just like, fine, this is insane, whatever. Assassin's Creed 2, I feel like, is so self-serious
and really thinks that this idiotic conspiracy is super cool.
And if you saw the ending of this game, you'd agree with me because it's absurd.
You've already seen the ending of Driver San Francisco?
No, Assassin's Creed 2.
Oh.
I was like, oh. So you're saying there's not a guy running through the streets?
I don't want
San
anyone to spoil Driver San Francisco for me.
No, we're going to lock ourselves in this fucking room and play this game.
We're going to be the only people who show up for the game. GameStop like 12 o'clock. They're not even going to have one.
Like, we'd all be in the like same there. Best Buy on gear. Like,
yeah. Oh, hey, dude, you pre-ordered two, huh? Great.
Yeah, fuck yeah, right. Man.
I thought there was going to be a midnight launch.
I got here early for
this.
The line, but there's no one here.
No,
so
apparently
we totally
we're just going to have to wait till
line.
First.
Beat the line, man. First.
Well, I brought the tent.
I got the, yeah, man. Pop tent. I'm going to go do a pizza run. I don't know if you want to pitch in. Probably some other people are going to come. You know, we can share with them maybe. I can get it like extra large.
What's funny is it's the exact opposite of what I was saying about Assassin's Creed 2, where uh-huh. It's like, oh, this is a video game, and if you subtracted the bullshit video gameness of it, you'd have a still decent historical fiction story that you could present to other audiences.
Right.
Where this is like, we're going to take Bullet, a hard-boiled like San Francisco action thriller, and then we're going to add some video game bullshit to it and put it in the video game space for that audience. It's like,
well,
opposite.
No. See, the thing is, I think where they arrived at San Francisco, and this is hilarious to me, and I'm totally fine
I'm
with it.
I'm for that. It sounded pejorative, but it's not.
All it is was, we think it would be cool to have a mechanic where you can jump from car to car. How do we do that? Right? Like, that's, I mean,
yeah, no,
surely,
you're completely right.
100%.
I can imagine, but I think it's too hilarious.
I can
to
imagine
not, to
being
not be
in that
it is kind of bullshit if you
but,
actually
I mean,
care about the reality of this. It's chasing game, but I don't.
If we go to the launch of this game and the hilarious obligatory dude in a pickup truck drives by and goes, it's all fucking dream. At least we can say, we know, man. And then he can keep driving.
No shit. Yeah. I like the fact actually that they're upfront. That, you know what I mean? Like, I like the fact that they're not trying to Shyamalama ding dong it out and just like at the very end of the game be like, oh my god, it was in a dream.
That poor fucker, like, by the way.
What he fucking
what
directed
fucker?
Avatar.
He got
the
to
last
direct Avatar.
I know. Just like, Shyamalama Ding Dong is now just his. It's on fucking Wikipedia. It has to be.
Well, I mean, he made himself a caricature, so he's gonna get a goofy.
Yeah,
name.
I know. I agree. Carry on.
But no, I mean, I like. I like the fact that
poor
they're just,
M. Night Shyamalan.
It's
Snoopy's flying ace.
You don't even know what you're fucking talking about, Jake Rodkin.
Yeah.
Oh wow, he's so sad because his Xbox doesn't work. For the past 5 fucking months.
Yes.
You're on a video game podcast,
at this point,
for Christ's
sake.
It's
your fault that it no longer works.
I know.
Could have red ringed 6 times between now and then.
Maybe it did.
It's hard to say. It hasn't been on. It's covered in dust. I saw it yesterday.
Yeah.
It looks disgusting. It looks like when they find that cask in the sewers in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
You know what that reminds me of? Indiana Jones ruined like fictional prehistoric machines for everything now.
What?
Like, you know, well, because you know Indiana,
what a fucking outlandish
record flies off the fucking
fuck Indiana Jones for this obscure reason that doesn't actually make sense when I say it the first time.
Okay, now you know Indiana Jones, like he'll find the crazy tomb or whatever, and then he like
and then
steps on a pressure plate and like a spear shoots out of the wall.
Yeah,
whatever, you
classic
know. I mean, stuff like at this point every video, like, you know, Tomb Raider, Assassin's Creed, all these games, just like, because there's no accountability in a video game, you just make the geometry do whatever you want. You don't have to worry about production design or anything in the same way you do in a movie.
I'm trying not to laugh.
Just,
carry on.
No, everything. Everywhere you go in Assassin's Creed, like, walls are fucking opening and closing, like, disappearing, and things are spinning around, and things are transforming. Like, even totally mundane things like opening up just a fucking normal chest where a thing is in it. Like,
he just spins around and holds a rupee above his head.
No.
No, but the chest was in fact made by a crazy, like, master German watchmaker.
Yeah, the chest has, like, a skull that splits up into parts and spins around for, like, you know, I mean, it's just every,
well,
that's such a given in the language of like weird historical fiction stuff now, that it's just like, oh, everything is that now. Whereas in Indiana Jones, it was like these very particular moments and this really convincing visual look to them. I mean,
that's
so why
me
fuck
out.
Indiana Jones?
Because Indiana Jones gave it. It's like, that's like saying fuck Alien for making
I'm
cool
saying,
corridors.
I'm not saying fuck Indiana Jones. I'm saying that's Indiana Jones caused this. I'm not saying they shouldn't have done it.
Okay.
I'm saying that it is the reason.
I always like it when it's just a regular chest. I think that there's a certain sort of class or style of art director or art style where that's just deemed not cool. I always like when things like that are just,
well, that's
a boring
true
in
video
thing.
Games.
Yeah,
video games,
no,
everything
and
is.
In modern genre film, you can't, where it's like, oh, we're working on the new version of the Iron Man suit. Like, it's the fucking same suit. No. We spent 300 years making this new suit where you'll notice that the metal is slightly different colored and the belt unbuckles in a crazy new way that we think people will love.
So you didn't like the new Iron Man suit?
I don't give a fucking shit about the new Iron Man suit, but they're like,
cool.
The idea that you can't, that you can't just do that, and like, oh, it infuriates me. Sorry.
What can you?
How about the new
do?
Batman suit?
I don't care. The new Batman suit was a little better.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Just, oh,
fucking
I don't know.
Badass is
the
what
idea
it was.
That there can't just be a thing
without someone spending way too much time
developing
a crazy intricate design, a crazy backstory. Yeah. Like, not everything needs that. Sometimes the chest to chest. Look, I'm holding a button that says, "In good old games we trust." I apologize.
No, I agree with you, though. There's something to be said for design that stands on its own holistically, not because it has 40 screws, like, spinning around in a weird way underneath, like, a fucking molecular subsurface. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's just, oh, this is recognizable because it looks like a thing that is strongly designed.
I agree.
It's a weird thing.
It's a weird thing. We've joked,
but I completely agree with you.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like that used to be the way that everything was designed, but
it's because now we have CGI and you can just do whatever the fuck you want.
Well, you have
that
collapsing staircase of bullshit in Indiana Jones 4 is where you go with that. Where it's everything in that movie is a cartoon version of that, like, 10,000 million hinges based with tongue and groove, like, ugh. Right. Yeah.
Well, yeah, by the way, you know, I mentioned Prince of Persia earlier. And, I mean, Prince of Persia is nothing but that. It bothers me a little less in that case because they actually use, like, that is the game. Like,
well, you have a
that
dagger
actually
that
matters
makes you
to
that
what
game
time,
is just
so.
The world is a huge, way overwrought trap, and you're the one person
and you're
who can
navigating
flip your way through that shit.
Right.
That's
whereas in Assassin's Creed 2, when you open that chest,
it's
exactly the same
decision.
As opening
it
up a chest.
Just cost money.
Right, when it's just, when you just have the protagonist press a button on the front of a door and it goes.
Right. Who the fuck was building this? Why are you, like, interacting with Leonardo da Vinci, like, one of history's greatest engineers ever, and he's like, I think I can maybe figure out how to build a glider. Meanwhile, you're tramping around these corridors where it's like, chunk, like, what? Sucks for fucking Leonardo da Vinci, apparently. Like, I guess that guy was way
like,
more behind the curve.
Criminal mastermind, in fact, employs a guy with 4,000 times the mechanical skills that da Vinci has.
Yeah.
Right, of like, I'd like
and
to make this tank, but we don't have the technology
hydraulics
yet.
And pistons.
Well, the guy three blocks down has this crazy door that will blow your mind.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of Prince of Persia, there's a funny they did a really cool thing in Prince of Persia: The Forgotten Sands, which I appreciated, which was that many, many, many times you just don't have to fight the skeletons. You know, like you'll run into like no, that's a big deal.
You just don't have to.
No,
like Chris walks into a room full of skeletons, like guys.
And in this one game, they're like, I'm not completely.
No, it's funny. It's funny you paint it that way because what ends up happening when you do this, like I hate fighting things in Prince of Persia games. I'm there to run around and swing on a pole and run up a wall and jump across a spike. Like that's what I want to do in those games, and that's what they're good at. And the combat in this game is much easier than other ones. So when you do,
so
have
do
to
they
fight,
sort of chase
fine,
you out of the room?
No, what happens is, because in this game, because in Prince of Persia, you don't run right out of the room. You spend a while, like, working your way vertically up that room. So you're in the same room as these enemies for a long time, right? Because you have to, like, press buttons and run across things and run back and back, like, do all these things. You know what Prince of Persia is like.
You have to play a Prince of Persia
so,
game
exactly.
in that room, yeah.
And so you
with
will, like...
skeleton.
You know, you'll be running around on the ground, and all of the skeletons will, like, you know, you'll get the cutscene where you walk into the room, and it'll zoom in on a fucking stupid face, and it'll be like, "Rawr!" And the camera will zoom in on it for no reason. You know, like, for some reason, video games feel like
they want you
to
know that there's an angry enemy.
Yeah, and so that'll happen, and then you'll, you know, they'll all start to converge on you, and you'll run away, and you'll run up a wall, and you'll jump on, do, like, a handhold or whatever. And then what's hilarious is they will just follow you on the ground and just stand there.
Just waiting for you to
just,
fall
like,
down like a
look
cat looking
you,
for a squirrel?
Look up at you expectantly. Like, they'll just watch you. Like, and as you swing, like, they won't make any noise. And then as you swing across, like, vertically, they'll just walk underneath you like, and, like,
that
follow
guy's
you
fall.
Around in this
10 bucks.
Match.
10 bucks. He's going to drop. And then we fucking got it. Don't even.
He doesn't even have a.
Just look at this guy.
He won't stop time.
Fucking guy's doing
it. He's right here.
Wait, what?
He'll fall.
He's just like 8 feet up there. He's fucked. Except you've got the time rewind.
Yeah,
this one
except
again,
you
which
land
really
10 feet above them and say, "Fuck you," and fly back up.
Yeah, but it's so weird. It's like a weird consequence, like a total unintended consequence of their decision to not have all the rooms
gated.
Yeah. What really sucks though is occasionally they will gate you, and there's absolutely no indication of it. So. There were times when I spent literally 15 minutes running around in a room trying to figure out like where I should jump and what button I should press.
I had
that
problem in Sands
of
Time as
well.
In
reality, all that happens is you need to kill all the skeletons, and that's retarded.
And then a ladder falls down that you didn't see?
For no reason. Yeah.
Well, that skeleton that was carrying a ladder. Or the prince makes a ladder out of his bones.
No. Yeah. Not at all.
In the second one.
Oh, my God. There would have been a clock wipe
whatever.
If I was doing it.
A clock wipe and then a bone ladder is constructed. Good thing I killed all those skeletons.
He wipes the sweat from his brow.
A clock wipe? What, like a camera?
Like
there's like time. You know, like, yeah, like 2 hours later, the prince has made a bone ladder.
The prince is made of bone ladder?
The prince has made a bone ladder.
The princess made of bone ladder. That's the subtitle of
the maiden. She's the maiden of bone ladder, which is a kingdom. Next to Spleen Bridge, but let's go on.
Yeah, so that's what happens. I don't know what you're talking about, but that's what happens in Prince of Persia Forgotten Sands.
Bone ladders.
Bone ladders.
Mm.
It's pretty good.
You guys really should play Snoopy.
Oh, man,
though.
You know what? I'm sorry, like, sorry to bring this up because we already talked about it, but nah, Alpha Protocol.
I wasn't going to do that. Video games.
No, I want to bring up Alpha Protocol because I talked about it when I was, you know, a few hours in or whatever, the first week. I completed it since then.
How is your Castro situation?
My Castro situation ended up pretty well. That is an impressive game. Like, it's not a great classic game, but it's really impressive. Like, they did a thing that is not in fashion these days. Like, these days, everyone, the kind of thing to do is make these morality systems that give you points for being good or bad, yeah, or that give you this reward or that reward and make them equal, you know, or whatever. You know, all that stuff in RPGs is like a really big deal these days. Alpha Protocol doesn't do it at all. Alpha Protocol sort of posits, like, look, the way real people work is when you say something that pisses someone off, some fucking jackass 1,000 miles away doesn't magically know that you were a jerk last week and then, you know, factor
right
that into
Alpha
some
Protocol
weird...
Alpha Protocol is all about sort of...
This is just a podcast.
It's about managing specific relationships. Mm-hmm. And so if you, you know, if you're a jerk to somebody, but they're a jerk and they like people who just are sarcastic assholes, then they might fucking just totally be your bro.
Well, like, you're all right.
Yeah.
Alpha Protocol protagonist.
Yeah. If you do that, if you do that to someone who's just a really like well-meaning, genuine person, you're not just going to get a tick in your like bad person score. They will actually, that person will dislike you less and you might actually not play a certain mission or not get certain information or whatever. Like, there are actual consequences, but it's, but you're given a, you know, you're given leeway to understand, like, as you talk to these people and you work through their conversations, you realize, oh, and they, you know, it's video game writing. So it's pretty obvious. This is the person who is a douche. This is the person who's nice. Like, it's not like you're, this is some amazing text that you have to like, you know, subtly sort through here, but it's really cool. Like, there are huge chunks of the game that will be different for different people as they play this. Like, it's, they really went above and beyond the Call of Duty in terms of actually including genuinely branching narrative. Like, I just don't, that's not a thing that people do very often these mm-hmm. days. You know, like, people will make the open world game where you can get this, you can like choose to do this side quest or not, mm-hmm. but people don't really do the branching thing anymore for mm-hmm. understandable reasons.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean,
it's
every
expensive.
Time we do it, exactly.
And yeah, it's
like, well, that's going to be content the player doesn't see.
Yeah, exactly.
That's always the,
but,
every single time.
But, you know, as someone who, like, as the player, when I don't have to worry about what their budget was, it's really cool to play mm-hmm. that and feel like, oh man, I actually did drive this experience in a way that very few games let you do. And, you know, I started playing the game when I, at the beginning, before I understood how to break the combat system, which, you know, because this game is not perfect, the way to succeed at it is to just turn it into like a farce in combat. You mm-hmm. know, basically, like I was implying, or what, like I was predicting in the previous cast, the correct way to play this game is in fact to become fully invisible and charge up your pistol that lets you just shoot off 5 shots in a half second, you know, targeted to people's heads. Like, basically, the way to play this game is to turn into the Predator and just fucking...
Or Predators.
Ghost your way through levels, shooting everyone in the head, and then you're fine. Like, you just break the combat. But the people will actually respond in ways that reflect that. I mean, early in the game, I was just going through and killing everybody because every time I'd try to be stealthy, I would fuck it up. And it would just devolve into idiocy, right? Running around shooting everyone. And I would kept getting shit after these missions. People being like, Jesus, whatever your name is. Like, I don't even remember the guy's name. You know, I told you.
Protocol.
Jesus Protocol.
Jesus, it's the story protocol. Of a protocol.
You know, we told you to be quiet. What
it's,
the fuck was that?
Abner, like, Protocol.
18 Marines died in this siege. What the fuck? And I'm like, fuck you. It really bothered me because, you know, it was like, they were hammering home their own game's mm-hmm. system's failure to support the type of gameplay that they say they can. And that was really irritating. And it still is dumb. But once you do get to the point where you're so overpowered and the systems are so broken that you can do whatever you want, you know, like, you get to the point where you just sort of win the combat. Like, you win the battle with the combat system and you can just choose. I can just mow everyone down or I can tranquilize everyone and I'll be fucking invulnerable. And like, but after you, you know, once you do that, you realize
that this is actually reflected in dialogue, and people actually start referring to you as someone
grim
who
sleeper
operates in these different ways.
Putting people
yeah.
to sleep.
And you get
they call you the Alpha Protocol.
You get little like perks.
Delta Protocol.
Kind of like in, you know, like in the original Fallouts when you could choose perks. Like in this game, you get stuff like that, mm-hmm. but they're assigned based on your behavior. So
that's good.
It's cool. It actually creates the impression that you are progressively building this character over time. Like in a way that is way more adaptive than most RPGs are these days. I don't know. It was interesting.
Because funny, the people who I know have spent like a long period of time with that game uh-huh. echo the exact same sentiment as you.
Oh, good. That's really good to hear, actually.
Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's almost exactly what Robert said, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because he like waxed on about this game for a long time. Yeah, it's funny.
Being a coworker of ours who's a programmer.
Yeah. But
that's good. I'm glad to hear that because a lot of times,
because
I feel like,
because but I feel like
the
in
general
the
discourse of this game
yeah,
has just
exactly.
been like
the discourse
whatever,
been,
man. It's not Mass Effect 2. It's fucking bullshit. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's and not it Mass like Effect a, 2. Mm-hmm. It's really, really different to Mass Effect 2.
Well, I guess they had a sequel plan that isn't happening. Is what I heard.
I don't know if they had one planned or not, but it's if
well,
they did, it's certainly not happening now.
They
yeah
declared
yeah
that they're not doing another one.
Right.
Which sucks when
it it kind of sucks, but it also like the important thing about this game was not this character and this plot and this franchise. Like the important thing was these systems and this.
Well, it'll just be interesting
design mentality they employed.
Those systems carry on, right?
Exactly. Right.
It's like I mean, I was probably really quiet for a second because I leaned back, but I think it's games like that where you see like kind of a mediocre first outing, and then their second outing is actually really great. You know.
Yeah, well, I mean, if it's mediocre and interesting,
exactly,
like, that's what's important. Yeah,
I'm trying to think of a good example off the top of my head, but I mean, that feels like a game that was ripe for that. You know, yeah. Where apparently, I guess, I mean, not to shit on a game because I haven't played any of it yet, but Crackdown 2 is the other way, where it's like all these great systems, and they just decided to like.
Well, I don't not. Even. Yeah, I haven't played Crackdown 2, and I have,
I'm this is all third hand. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I can say that like from my perspective, when I look at Crackdown 2, I loved Crackdown.
Oh, me too.
I thought it was a great game, but. When I look at Crackdown 2, it's not even like it looks bad. It just, I'm like, oh yeah, I played that. It was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really need to spend $60 more on this again. Like it's disappointing because I liked Crackdown so much. But when I look at Crackdown 2, I just can't get excited about it. Like it just
exactly
looks like such a perfunctory sequel to me that, you know, I don't know. That was a disappointment because I did like that game a lot. Mm-hmm. Jake,
what do you got,
like
Jake?
He wants to say
what
something.
Do you guys want to do some reader mail?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, it's been a long
time
since we did reader mail.
It's been a while, and I think it's time.
Guys, I would love to do some reader mail.
We could read some mail from readers.
Okay, we're going to take a break and do reader mail. Break okay, now.
Mail
break.
Readers.
Video
game. The sun is fucking 80s-ing it up on your wall over there.
Yeah. your 80s.
80s dog is
like
just waiting.
80s dog.
I'm sorry. There's no 80s dog.
No.
There might be
80s dog
is
actually a ponytailed saxophonist who plays a, smoky solo just when that window, when the light is cast like
that's
that.
That's true.
And then what you need is there would be, if this was a movie, there would be, like the love scene that we're having in front of that would be in silhouette.
That's true. On
like Top
slats.
Gun.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but like that Top Gun, that
definite
first
fucking
sex scene in Top
smoky
Gun.
Sax.
Yeah,
like a fog machine is out in force, and the fog is orange.
Yeah,
yep. We were short one Crockett.
That the MIDI trumpet was born in the '80s, like when the smoky, like when you know,
right. Well,
the
because,
fast saxophone is being raised to like
if you can't
new levels
if you can't
of cheesiness.
If you can't afford that saxophone, a keyboard can provide a faithful substitute.
Video game.
Oh, Max Ides, by the way, drives a tugboat. That's how he arrives everywhere. Oh,
fuck.
What date is it?
What day?
Isn't that an inefficient mode of transportation, Max Ides?
I only work one day a month.
Come on. Why is that him? Also, I drive a cab in a cartoon. Max Ides.
I like that you're Max Ides' obnoxious drunk doctor girlfriend.
You're Max Ides. Like, everyone's got their...
And everyone does Max Ides a little different, you know? It's a little...
Oh, we're all pretty much on the same page on Max Ides.
Come on.
Video game.
So, Chris.
Yeah?
What did the readers write in?
I mean, the readers wrote in a bunch of stuff because we haven't done reader mail in like 2 months. Yeah.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Jake, what's up? Have you played any video games
Jake's
recently?
Jake's here for the reader mail, actually.
I tried to play
and,
some.
And
but...
the free deli-style mustard...
Gardetto's
pretzels.
Brand
that's
pretzels.
True.
Do you enjoy those?
The mustard is kind of powdery, gets in your hands.
Dear the Idle Thumbs podcast, video games, boost, scoops, and hopefully famous Sean Van Anim and Vanaman.
Oh,
so he's totally here.
Thanks, buddy.
No scoops today, though.
I just wanted to drop you guys a quick note that thanks to your podcast, I bought a gaming PC with Far Cry 2, Mass Effect 1 and 2, Trine, King's Bounty, and Civilization, along with the Orange Box and the entire 3D GTA series.
Wow.
Yeah, I bought a gaming PC and $400 worth of software.
See, here's the heartwarming moment coming up. As an aside, I bought Far Cry 2 for the 360 sometime last year based on the Idle Thumbs thumb of approval, and I hated it. I would spend so much time getting lost in the woods, killed at checkpoints, and head first into missions only to be killed immediately.
That's the fun
it
of
wasn't
it.
Until a friend showed me the proper way to play it, or at least the different ways in which to play it,
on mushrooms,
that I properly understood its true majesty. Now, after about...
It's true majesty?
Yeah. He went from hating to majesty?
Yeah, dude. Now, after putting 20 hours into it on the 360
on new software.
And another 15 hours on PC, I'm ready to say that it ranks in my top 10 favorite games of all time and my favorite game in the past few years. Thank you again, Hunter Pendleton, Fort Worth, Texas. So, that's awesome.
Great, Hunter. Glad you're enjoying it. I hope you're enjoying your new gaming PC and all that sweet video game software you purchased. May I recommend? No, just kidding.
assuming you still have your Xbox.
Perhaps Snoopy's Flying Ace. My gamer tag is Crime Fighter with an A on the end.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Crime Fighter.
How do I not have you on live? I guess it's because I never use live.
I don't know. Oh.
All right.
I guess James, it's because I don't like you.
That's also true. James Small writes, "Hi, the Idle Thumbs podcast.
Hello.
Hey, James.
Having listened to some of your earlier podcasts about Fallout 3.
They were better than your new ones.
And how, and how there was a hub of angry internet men proclaiming it isn't Fallout enough.
Was that internet men as one word? Because...
Do you know plainclothesman is one word?
Yeah, I love that. That's a good word.
Yeah, we're talking about three-word compound words.
Three-word compound words today?
Oh, plainclothesman, yeah. Nice. I didn't think
that was plainclothesman is really good, yeah.
Yeah, I got another one. But
anyway, he says, please do not take this as another one of those emails. The atmosphere and...
But no mutants allowed.
The atmosphere and mood of... No, but he makes a good point. I read this email already.
Oh.
The atmosphere and mood of Fallout 3 is spot on. So too is the wit and dialogue. Missing, however, was the one thing that really hit a nerve for me in the previous two installment, what made Fallout to me, which was the sense of real-life consequences of in-game choices. It might not have been a design decision, but for me on many playthroughs... and he's talking here about Fallout 1 and 2. There were times when I would have made too many bad choices and the game would have been completely unwinnable no matter what I tried to do. No one would talk to me or they would attack me on sight, which funneled me into areas where the only choice I would have would be to restart my entire playthrough to hope to see the endgame. This gave me a real sense of fear in my choices and worry that I would do something so egregious that hours of time would feel wasted. Fallout 3 did not have the same type of consequence, so if I tried to do something evil, I could. Even detonating an entire town only made it a little bit harder to beat the game. So I immediately felt less engaged, as I couldn't really do anything to actually damage my playthrough. Seeing as you talk a lot about consequence in games, I thought that might be food for thought and give you one person's perspective on why a great post-apocalyptic game with tons of great features wasn't quite the Fallout he wanted. Love the show. Eagerly awaiting the next one. Cheers, James Small. Yeah, I think this is a really interesting point. I was thinking about this recently in the context of XCOM, which is the new game being made by 2K Marin and 2K Australia. There was a thing that, like a property of games that existed in the 90s on the PC where a certain category of games got so systemic that you were actually playing a real system and you could fuck it up because your success or failure was actually based on the systems this game was running on, not on this sort of like freight train narrative engine that just kind of propels you along no matter what. Like, I don't know if that's necessarily better or worse, but I think it's really interesting. Like, I think it's interesting that there was a time when you could make a game, you know, for hundreds of thousands or in some case millions of people that actually does, like, they can actually lose it, you know, not just a multiplayer game, but an actual systemic single player game. Like, again, maybe it's good that went away because it was too frustrating for people. But, you know, I do think it's a really interesting, cool thing that existed once and is pretty much gone at this point. And he's totally right. That is a huge difference between Fallout 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
I wish I had played any Fallout game to be able to comment on that. I've never played a Fallout.
Yeah.
Not one. Yeah. Like, I mean, this is a quick aside. If I was going to do that, what would you do?
The first one. Play the first one.
Play Fallout 1.
The tone is better than Fallout 2, in my opinion.
And then play Fallout 3?
Oh, you've not played 3 either?
I have not played a Fallout.
Well, yeah, you can do them. I mean, they're so different that, you know, it's not...
Yeah. Imagine if I came to you and said, should I play XCOM with this one that's coming out?
Those games are even more different. I mean, those are like totally different types of games. Fallout 3 is a really good game, though. Like, I think it's a good game. But this guy makes a really interesting observation that, like, when I read it, it really I started thinking about all, you know, there were tons of those games mm-hmm. in the 90s that were like that, you know, where we had these, there was like this move forward in, not even move forward, because that exists in the 80s too with guys like Chris Crawford and like Dan Barry and or Danielle Barry and all that stuff. Yeah, there was this really interesting like avenue of design that really existed heavily on the PC mm-hmm. that was all about that. And a lot of those things ended up finding their way into more modern games, like modern Western RPGs and stuff like, you know, BioShock. Those games have like inherited that. They just treat them in like they soften it. They make it more forgiving. Which again, I'm not saying that's bad, mm-hmm. but it's just how history has kind of gone, and it's left that one particular avenue of game design a lot less, you know, approached these days for obvious reasons. It's fucking hard, but it. That was one thing that was really interesting about that era, was that you were making game, or, you know, people were making games for an audience that was big enough that you could make a profit on a game, but kind of still under the radar, you know, like you weren't worrying about whether
you weren't
like
worrying about accessibility,
made, like Julian, whoever, whatever his name is, who made the original Xbox or XCOM, was not worried about like whether that was going to get every magazine cover and whether it was going to sell 5 million units, you know, like that right. was not a concern
for sure
that guy had to think about, which was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
that was John, right? Was that the guy's name? It's a good observation.
This guy, yeah, John, James, no, James Small,
James, Jim,
Jay Allard.
we'll so
keep talking about Jay Allard.
It's so weird that Jay Allard would write into the podcast.
Yeah,
he said he might.
I miss
that.
Jay Allard.
Yeah,
just okay. saying.
You just miss him existing?
No, when I saw Kinect announced, and when I saw
the fact that he wasn't there,
and when I saw the look of that new Xbox, one, I missed seeing Jay Allard there. Two, I feel like maybe part of why the Xbox 360 is cool might actually have been because that guy was leading that project. I don't know. Sorry,
Jay Allard vindicated here.
Yeah,
you're
not a
podcast.
Fan of the new look of the Xbox 360.
I think the new Xbox 360 looks stupid, and I think that Kinect doesn't actually match with what people buy a 360 for.
Well, that's certainly true. I think everyone agrees with
it. It looks like two Rokus like taped together.
That whole thing is weird, and it doesn't feel like it's so weird to even be saying this. But
I like that at the same time.
It does not feel like a thing that Jay Allard would have led at Microsoft. Like if you look at the original 360,
just shaking their head.
God, Jay Allard.
I'm sorry. It's so funny that
an Idle Thumbs podcast Hall of Fame.
That's
Jay Allard,
going in.
Jay Allard has gone from like
no. Jay Allard is.
I think Jay
Idle Thumbs object of ridicule and like weird perverted sex stories to like kindly godfather of like back in the Allard. This would never fly.
Prudent industrial design.
I think that guy makes a fool of himself and he's a hilarious dude. But I also
what's
can't,
with the new guy though?
I don't know who that is. But whatever.
Girl, got the glasses.
I don't know. I want my Jay back. This is like this is like Drew Carey taking over The Price is Right.
Give me the fucking rotting corpse of Bob Barker.
Yeah,
just prop him up against giant wheel.
There is a certain actual sort of sense behind all the decisions made for the launch of the 360, and even though it kind of bombed out, the Zune and the Kinect and the new industrial design of the Xbox don't feel as unified or as clever to me as the original 360 did. It bums me out. And it makes me wonder if the common denominator is actually Jay Allard, which would be fucking hilarious.
Well, there is something pretty funny that is like, to me, the juxtaposition of check out this machine. You can dance around in front of our all-seeing eye, and it'll make a guy move on the screen, and it's fun, and you can bounce a ball, and then also buy our Darth Vader fucking box next to it.
The original like, Xbox looked like a fucking cyborg like implant had landed in your house, and then the next Xbox
is cyborg waffle iron.
Like the next 360 was really like super friendly and curved, but it still kind of it looked like it was still bro friendly. Like it did a pretty good job with the industrial design. And then the next one is back to just like grating. Like you expect to see 15 of those lined up and then go out of focus as a huge fucking boot clomps by.
Yeah,
like
50, Cylon army.
50
comes
Cylon
behind
soldiers go marching past it, and then it will start smoking.
I agree.
It's ugh. I don't know.
I'm just looking at. I mean, even the Elite. I think it was a nice kind of even just when they went.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a funny weird thing that it feels like a step backwards to me for the Xbox.
Yeah, you pepped up for that Jay Allard.
Fucking Jay Allard.
You've been restraining. You've been like holding this back. Yeah. Like I gotta say something. I really miss Jay.
What? It's weird. It's weird to have a positive thing to say about Jay Allard, and I'm probably wrong. And if someone knows the actual.
Oh my god.
That was actually a burp, not a tear.
Well, I don't know what that was. It was the most emotional I've ever seen you.
Anyway, Jay Allard's a hilarious dude.
But that struck me as hilarious also when I saw the new 360 unveiled at E3. I was like, what the fuck? Jay would never make that.
That's beautiful. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
All right. So Dietrich Stogner writes...
Sorry.
That's funny. No.
Boost Scoops and Dietrich. Video games.
Good dog.
Well, I played... Okay, so this is a good email. This kind of ties into the Fallout one in a little way. Because he writes about Sims, and Sims is kind of one of the few modern games that is just like, here's a system.
Yeah.
Go play in it. Anyway, so he says, while I played Sims 3 the other day, my fiance's daughter Hannah was watching me. When I put out the fire in the Sims fireplace, she asked why I bothered in the video game. I told her that the Sims uses bad scenarios that are realistic, and they keep the game lifelike. I explained that if you leave the stove on or leave the fireplace burning, it can start a fire in real life, so they modeled that in the Sims as well. She nodded, and I felt happy that I'd imparted a little bit of wisdom into her 8-year-old brain. 10 minutes later, I took my sim outside and began looking through the telescope. As my digital self searched the heavens, a giant fucking meteor crashed down and crushed my sim to death. There was no warning, no chance to learn from a near miss, just squish. As the Grim Reaper came to escort my sim to hell, my sim was an asshole, I glanced over and saw Hannah staring at the computer screen with a look of absolute horror on her face. It took 3 days for her mother and me to convince her that just because it happened in The Sims, it doesn't mean she's actually going to be crushed by an asteroid while she's waiting for the bus.
So Will Wright is ruined this fucking girl's life.
Yeah, just thought you'd appreciate this.
Yeah, she's gonna just not.
Like, that's amazing. Sometimes, what happens to game is real.
Fire starts. Come on,
it's just like real life.
It'll spread.
If you look at a telescope, you'll die by the heavens.
Sometimes you go to college and become a lesbian.
Yeah. Well, that's true, though.
I don't know. This was an incredible scenario to me. Like,
yeah.
I love the idea that he just went to like great pains to reinforce this knowledge of like, yeah, sometimes things happen and you've got to deal with it. And then just like 2 seconds later,
murder.
When Hannah's father Dietrich is squashed by a meteorite, that girl's never leaving the asylum.
Yeah, that's done.
Oh, a good story. Thanks, Dietrich. That was good quality.
Miles Casey Nestor writes, "Hey Thumbs,
Miles Casey
I realized
Nestor.
You guys talked. Oh, so this is about Cryostasis. I realized you guys talked about this game a year ago on June 18th, 2009." Have you finished the game? What did you think of the ending? I really like the different plot threads that brought the possession come together. Ugh. That you affect through possession come together. I thought the boss was stupid, etc. And then he says some stuff about the story. But the end was pretty cool. They could have... whatever. He says some more stuff about the plot that I shouldn't read. But anyway, the reason I brought this up is because I actually haven't finished Cryostasis yet. But like recently, it's one of the bajillion games I've started and not finished. Which I've been trying to remedy lately, which is why I've finished so many games.
Such a completionist these days, Chris.
I know. It's weird. But the reason I bring this up is because on the Idle Thumbs forums lately, like, there's been this amazing, like, grassroots Cryostasis appreciation campaign that just came out of fucking nowhere. Like, I guess it was spurred by the recent Steam sale. Like, it was only a few dollars. All of a sudden, like, the Cryostasis thread has just exploded with people being like, man, I just finished this game, and this is one of the most amazing experiences I've had in years. It's incredible. And now I feel really dumb for being the person that talked about this game to these people.
It's great. No spoilers, guys. No spoilers.
Yeah, and, like, now what? So that was a crazy thing. And, like, our forums have discovered this is, like, this amazing, like, sleeper, you know, cult sensation. So I actually have to go back and finish it now. By the way, stop by our forums. They're fun. People are nice there, and you can play multiplayer games with them.
IdleThumbs.forms.
That's not what it is. Oh. You silly person.
I don't know. I was on there once.
Forums.IdleThumbs.net.
/forums.
I think my forum avatar is
Well, it's either IdleThumbs.net/forum or forums.IdleThumbs.net.
/forums.
All right. Jared Garst writes, Civilization art.
Jared.
On a scale from 1 to rad, how rad would it be if Civilization had art based on the age your civilization is in? So the units start out as cave paintings, then change to flat medieval art, and finally into what the game looks like now.
Oh, he's talking about that game.
I know, that's why I read this.
Okay.
Also, he said this is good, though, too. Also, I'm disappointed that you can't cheat your way into the postmodern era, where you endlessly research existential thought in a post-structuralist society.
That should be in the game.
Yeah, that should be in there.
That'll be huge.
So yeah, what he meant actually is Rock of Ages.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
That looks rad.
Oh, my gosh.
The guys who made Xenoclash are making a game called Rock of Ages. Like, a bullet point in this game
is... Not to be confused with Rock of Love.
Like, this makes...
Play through the eras of art history?
Yeah, play through many real eras of human art history. Like, what? Amazing. That's a feature of your game. You're the fucking best.
It looks kind of like...
It looks like Odama.
It looks like Odama, but far cooler.
Yeah.
Well, Do you drop? Are you the rock or are you the other stuff?
I don't know. I don't care. You take like a big ball rock thing and you crash it
and you
through.
You roll it down a hill like, yeah, full of art.
You crash into people's fucking faces through art history.
The best part of the trailer, one, or the two best parts of the trailer are.
You said it wrong.
The like, they claim they'll have era appropriate music as well, which is awesome. Like, they have Mozart's Dies Irae in the back.
Oh, yeah.
I'm probably pronouncing that incorrectly, but it's an amazing piece of music. in the background that just like totally sells the trailer. And two,
if the last song is Robert Palmer's Addicted to Love and it's in the 80s, sold.
God, that would actually be really cool, an 80s era where everything is weird, like
stupid checkerboard and lips and shit,
looks like the inside of a Mac.
Like Devo album covers,
yeah.
Anyway,
lots of piano keys are everywhere for some reason. Yeah.
Other than the music, my favorite thing in the trailer is that the sun, like the most of the stuff in the trailer is Renaissance era stuff. And the sun is like this huge, crazy, like Renaissance era, like solar calendar that is just in the sky and just fucking like fills up the skybox of your screen. Like, it's such a clever, creative way to represent the sun in the medieval era. And like, just seeing that that's the kind of attitude they're taking towards the art design in this game just made me all the more confident. These are the guys who made Xenoclash, which is, mm-hmm, I thought was really interesting because that was a game that was surreal without just being a wacky art style, right? Like, when people talk about visual uniqueness in games, they usually mean like it's cel shaded or like it's got a cartoony thing. The thing I thought was interesting about Xenoclash is that it was really unusual looking,
crazy.
But just, yeah, because the stuff it was depicting was crazy. And now they're going the total other direction. Now they are doing the total like weird looking rendering.
Yeah, but
stuff.
It's very unique, which is
exactly,
nice.
But it's not the same stuff everyone else does. So these guys are like fucking half a dozen Chilean dudes being like the most creative people in the video game industry.
Visual,
so yeah, way to go,
lexicon.
Guys.
When this game sells 7 million copies, and like Activision, like, we need our Rock of Ages.
When it sells 7 copies, more accurately.
I love the fact that I want to believe that we could live in a world where this would sell 7 million copies, and then
Activision's like, turn it into a Guitar Hero game.
Or just,
I think Atlas is publishing this, which is a good match, I think.
Oh, for sure.
And then they're also making, I think, Xenoclash 2, so that'll be cool. Or maybe they're not, I forget.
So what was this guy's question? Oh, his was more of like, wouldn't it be cool
if you could do
and
that
they were
too,
like, well, if you're willing to sacrifice
cool
an RTS
for rolling a rock around.
For like strange, rock downhill explodey sim.
The internet also pointed
also
out.
Also, it's a turn-based strategy.
Oh, sorry, it is turn-based.
The Rock of Ages thing, and this is a stupid thing to even point out, but the internet was like, oh, it's like Terry Gilliam's Monty Python stuff, and I hadn't thought about that at all.
Because it's flat.
No, but if you look at the fucking logo for Rock of Ages,
it
basically
looks exactly
is just
like
the Life
Monty
of Brian
Python's
logo.
Life of Brian, exactly, yeah.
That made me happy, because it doesn't really actually look like the Gilliam stuff, but it looks, it's sort of culturally this a lot
exactly
of the same sort
of
source
a lot
material,
of the
but a,
stuff
way,
was
a very
by,
different style.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's really, well done, those guys.
We're clapping for Chile.
And Chilean game developers.
Yeah, we love the stew. Chili.
The what?
Chili.
Oh, right.
It's a stew. Very clever. Soup.
See this joke?
Joseph Thron writes, game design around the world. Critics can be quick to note a game's physical point of origin, but I rarely see anyone elaborate on what actually makes
those Chilean game developers.
But, yeah, I know.
Nice.
But I rarely see anyone elaborate on what makes an actual game Eastern European, for example. What are these philosophies that developers from different countries have? What are the tenets of Eastern European, Western, or Japanese game design?
Well, I mean, I think Japanese, like the Japanese Western philosophy is the most easiest to delineate. But I do think like a lot of that requires historical context.
Who is it that I was talking to someone? Yet. Was it one of you guys?
You and I were talking about how the Japanese RPG guys are just like, yeah, we're fucking doing it wrong.
I was talking to someone where it was just like someone said, oh, well, in Russia, people just expect the game to be this way.
Oh, yeah, that was me.
Yeah.
Okay. I this was years ago.
Sorry, we can come back to your Japanese thing.
Yeah, I want to hear that.
I'm cool
well
with Japan. That's all I got to say.
We should talk about it after this. But I was reading an article with an interview with one of the guys making Stalker. This was years ago before, I think. Maybe it was a little after the original Stalker came out. And the person was basically saying, you know, all these Eastern European games, like it's, you know, what
the
is it about?
Said this.
Yeah, the interviewer was saying this. You know, like what is it about Eastern Europeans where you want to make these games where, you know, using these huge worlds and so open-ended and all these systems that interact and players all these choices. And the guy was like, what do you mean by that? And he's like, well, you know, I mean, so many games from that part of the world have all these systems and have all this exploration and all this player agency. Like what? Why do you do that? And the guy was just like, that's just what people here think a game, that's what a game is. And the guy was like, oh, All right. And it was interesting because it, I mean, obviously not every game from Eastern Europe is like that. I mean, Metro 2033 was made by X-Stalker guys, and that's a much more linear experience. But there, you know, it does, to me, that's encouraging about games as an expressive form, because it really does show like how sort of cultural expectations and kind of tendencies actually feed into the creative end result.
So Americans just want a big dumb game that looks good?
Well, I mean, you know, there. You
whereas in the East, they want.
I mean, there's something to be said for the fact that you're probably not going to see a lot of American development studios making anything as bleak as Stalker. Like, you're just, I mean, if you do, it's going to be filled with like crazy, like yeah, like hardcore. You know what I mean? It's like you can make games that are grim and dark in North America, but you're probably not just going to make this like desolate, bleak, like humanity soul sapping.
Right. That game would actually turn out to be. Now I've just forgotten the name of the game.
What was it? What are you
Poster
doing?
Poster is that guy.
Poster is that guy.
The box art is the guy.
Borderlands.
Borderlands.
Oh, Borderlands. Yeah, right.
Jake was putting a fake gun to his head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, I like the.
I mean, Borderlands is so
radio.
Like, could not be farther from that.
No, not at all.
Right, but I mean, just
where it's like, this is desolate, but cartoony.
But it's goofy and
don't worry
it's
about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's,
look at this little guy.
It's the same. The implication is that a very similar situation narratively created both of those
right,
worlds.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
I mean, there are bleak. It is just kind of it's more of a nuanced tone than it's kind of bleakness, because there are bleak Western like action games, like incredibly bleak, like a Dead Space. Like, that game's a bummer
but
to
that's,
play.
But I still see that as,
but it's
like,
more survival horror, I
you're
guess.
You're gonna fucking stop.
Like, in that, that's the game where you press up, there's a button, like, dedicated to, like, brutally fucking putting your boot through a guy's skull
there's
and
a lot of
blood spattering everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, the Stalker games are violent as well.
But they're more
but they're
understated?
Violent in a, yeah, it's yeah. Like, oh, well, I just shot that guy and he fell over and died. Like, you know, it's not.
Half-Life kind of has a lot of that.
Yeah, Half-Life is actually similar
one.
To that, but it's
yeah, the first one. For
Half-Life
sure.
has more levity in it, but yeah, it does. It is actually.
Well, before there's like head crabs and stuff, you're just like, oh, that guy just fell over. Like the yeah. death animations in that game are not a Western thing. They don't
no,
feel
no,
Western.
No, no, it's
all.
Very subdued.
I guess in the German version of Half-Life, if you shoot a scientist, they just sort of sit down and then fall
really?
Asleep. Yeah,
is that true?
Yeah,
that's
hold
awesome.
On. I'm just, you know what? I see what you've done here. I was gonna go ahead and rest.
It's okay. I'm a scientist.
I'm gonna sit down and just.
I have
out.
Science.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna.
I mean, Half-Life.
Hang out.
We were talking to the German interns at Telltale about this. Like, Half-Life is notorious, the German version, because the aliens in the military, when you shoot them, instead of blood, gear sprites come flying out. I guess, but
oh
when you shoot
gosh.
Scientists or blatant humans, they just
I
sort
hope,
of go.
I hope
oh,
Valve
well,
just.
I take
hope
rest.
Valve just thought that was hilarious.
It's so like, well, I mean, because in Germany, I guess you can't have
yeah, I know,
guys
yeah,
come
they,
flying
yeah.
out. Anyway,
also, as a note, Half-Life 2 was art directed by an Eastern European guy.
Hmm.
So
there you go. So maybe, I mean, I think I boldly said that we don't have enough historical, we don't have enough distance from the movements, but maybe I feel like I'm probably wrong, actually.
Yeah, everything is more obvious in hindsight, right? But
yeah.
I mean, you know, you can see some broad trends at least.
And again, I don't go traipsing through Eastern European first-person shooters that often, so
yeah.
I'm probably the wrong guy to ask.
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't do a lot of PC gaming, right? Because, I mean, that stuff is
no.
almost exclusively on the
like,
PC.
No. Which is why I was looking at your happy little alien
oh, yeah.
laptop here.
I want to talk about this, because this is an
shit.
Amazing machine. I've had, I you know, 5 years ago, I had the worst computer experience of my life with
this
shitty-ass Alienware desktop that I bought, and it was
oh.
garbage. And anyone I could talk to, I told them. You know, who was asking about what brand I should buy or whatever.
Like, not fucking,
not
Alienware.
I had to jump through a million. I spent a year trying to get them to take that machine back or replace it. And it was just a nightmare, and it was stupid, and it blew. And I've never bought another pre-assembled desktop since then. I've just built my own and everything's been fine. But you can't really do it without the laptop. So I recently was going on a trip. This is actually when I was going to London. And I wanted to have a computer to take with me. And I wanted one that was, you know, like... decently capable of playing some games. I didn't end up playing any games on that trip, but I, you know,
you wanted
a gamer. I wanted one in the long term.
You're
maybe
Chris
I can
Remo.
Play a game on
yeah.
it. Yeah,
you're not gonna go over there with an Asus
right.
E,
but I, but I didn't want a big, heavy, large computer. I like
no,
I've,
this is
I've
quite
had,
small.
Exactly.
I can
I've
steal
had,
this.
I've had big laptops before, and it sucks. It's horrible.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of research, and literally the only computer that I could find that fit my needs, which were three,
picking
it needed
it up,
to
it's
be
noise,
powerful.
Probably.
It needed to be small
oh, sorry,
and light. And it needed to be relatively affordable. And there was only one that fit all these criteria, and it was the Alienware M11X. And I went down to Best Buy, and they had one in stock, and I bought it. And it was $1,000, which is certainly more than you'd pay for a netbook, but a lot less than you'd pay for like a traditional gaming laptop This thing is badass. This is the best laptop I've ever owned. It's small. It's light. The battery lasts for hours and hours.
Its build is good.
Its build is look good. It's metal. Good. It feels really solid.
I'm holding it right now.
Sean also works for Alienware.
No. I'm just...
Look at this? I'm holding it right now. It's amazing.
It's nice. Yeah. Idle Thumbs is not known for its hardware reviews.
No.
So I don't really know how you do that on a podcast.
I'm so impressed.
Look at this cool thing.
No, I mean, it's just... I don't understand how they fit that computer into this size. Like, it's crazy. I mean... You know.
And it has a nice video card?
Yeah, and you can turn the video card on and off. So if you're not doing a 3D application, you can get way better battery life. And it's quieter and cooler
HDMI
and everything.
HDMI out?
HDMI out. You can connect it to a monitor or TV or whatever.
It can surf the internet?
It does have internet. It does have an internet.
But it has the internet?
It does have the internet. It does not have an optical drive, though, which is fine because I never use my optical drive in my laptop.
Interesting. $1,000 computer without an optical drive.
But it's so small, though. That's the thing. Like, most think how much space that would take up. Yeah.
I don't know. This is nearly
netbook sized. I mean, this is a small computer.
It is. It's like, what, like 4 pounds?
All right. We're talking about a thing no one's looking at right now. I think it's...
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You're right.
Look at this. If you want a small, powerful laptop that is not absurdly expensive, the Alienware M11X is really nice.
M11X. Maybe Alienware sent us a few of them.
I wish. Jesus. Anyway.
So it doesn't hurt to ask, Jake.
Send me a laptop.
That was me speaking. Sean Vanneman, Telltale Games. Send it there. I'll get it.
Michael Strait writes,
hey, Mike.
Voice acting in Titan Quest. Dear Mr. Boost, I saw that you were giving Titan Quest a try. Were you surprised by the quantity and quality of the voice acting?
I was.
Also, how about those sunsets? I look forward to hearing you talk at great length about Moonbase Alpha, Earthman.
You just read this email so you could talk about Moonbase Alpha.
Actually, I didn't know that was going to be in there.
I pre-screened all of the...
No, I did have an ulterior motive, which was just to say Titan Quest seems pretty fun. I started playing it recently.
Mm.
But I don't really agree with this guy. The voice acting doesn't seem particularly great to me. Maybe it gets better. But I just wanted to say the Diablo sort of genre of games is one of those that I think a lot of people have the tendency to just ignore everything in it unless it's Diablo.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, some people will play Torchlight.
And Deathspank.
Yeah, that's a little different. But I mean, Titan Quest is like straight up Diablo.
Okay.
Titan Quest is really good, actually. It's like they learned a lot of really good lessons from Diablo. They implemented a dual class system that is really like interesting and cool. I really like how the skill trees work. It's basically a game that admits Diablo figured a lot of shit out. We're just going to make that game, but put our own ideas on top of it. And I don't know why I never played it earlier. It's really fun. I played it with Nick Brecken
and
Alice O'Connor over at Shack News.
What's the theme?
Greek mythology.
I mean, that's what I would have guessed, but
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's fine. The story stuff is whatever, but it actually makes me really now look forward to those guys, Iron Lore, who made Titan Quest. They were shut down by THQ, but they recently formed a new studio, Crate Entertainment, and now they're making another, PC Diablo-esque game that they're funding themselves. And now I'm excited about it. So that's cool. Good for those guys. Also,
yours.
Moonbase Alpha, hilarious.
Seems like a Chris Ramo approved game.
Yeah, can we, not tonight, but we should. I'd like to get into that.
It's interesting.
Yeah. We should.
You mean
it's
magical?
We should actually just like.
I have an amazing story about that.
We just book some time with the old Casa de Ramo
next time because we're doing more of these.
That's fine.
I thought this was our last one. No.
PAX episode is the last one.
That's true.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Bring streamers.
Yeah.
Chris will play. I hope you had the time of your life.
I think we have more mail, but that's probably enough.
I think we're probably good.
Yeah.
Anyone else who wrote us?
Don't worry, keep writing. I mean, it's been bad.
Keep sending in video game dreams.
Questions at idlethumbs.net.
Or 55Wizard on.
Don't do that.
55Wyoramo. We don't check that right now, but I promise that at PAX, we won't actually play any of them.
And that's a promise you can take to the bank.
Video games.
Oh, the video game bank?
The video game bank. That was Sean Vanneman.
Filling in for Nick Brecken. Bye.
Are we done?
Video games.
Can't see myself from this angle. What does it look like compared to you guys?
It looks like a tiny little...
You're a little baby.
It looks like a baby would make a noise. But mine's really loud.
I play baby games after all.
I play baby games after all.
the last sentence of your
babyest game saddest. Of them all. How is it now? Does it look any better?
The most babyest is game.
Do I look less baby now?
You're a little less baby.
Oh, you're the most deadliest game now.
Wait, really?
No.
Most dangerous game.
Oh.
Talking a little more about babies.
Man.
What about the babies though?
Oh, it's close to you're better now.
Oh, am I sort of not a baby?
You're still kind of a baby.
Oh God.
No,
I can't stop being a baby. Baby.
Baby.
Baby.
Baby. Video game.
Baby.
Yeah, we're pretty close at this point.
All right.
Fuck Max Ides. It's only the 14th.
Oh, fuck.
But dude, it's the 14th. We're okay.
It's February.